Yeah, babies is a winner.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Sunday, November 5th, 2023. This is your award-winning Gimlo Nation Media Assassination, episode 1605.
This is No Agenda.
Remembering the 5th of November and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in Team Region number 6 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where literally nobody knows what it means when you say that you look like the Bobbsey twins. I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Oh, that's funny. I said that just the other day to somebody. So someone literally knew, but they were 60, so. Only 60-year-olds know the Bobbsey twins.
No, nobody knows.
Nobody knows the Bobbsey twins anymore? How about...
Well, do you?
Of course I do.
Okay, tell us.
No, it was the Bobbsey twins was like a children's adventure book. And I'll give you another one. The Happy Hollisters. Do you remember them?
No, you got me on that one. I didn't remember that. All I remember is the Bobbsey twins commentary. I didn't realize that it was a series of books from about the early 1900s
to
the 70s. And it was like 75 volumes.
Yeah. And how about this? Tom Swift.
Yeah, Tom Swift. Yeah, I used to read Tom Swift when I was a kid.
Tom Swift, it was from the late, I think it was, wasn't that even before 1900, Tom Swift? It was like some, it was really old. I had no idea.
We have computers in front of us.
Oh, okay, well, if you want to do that. Consults people of knowledge. If we have to do that. It was Tom Swift and his electric grandmother, Tom Swift and his flying 1910. Okay, I was close. Only 10
Bobbsey
years old.
Twins predates him.
Oh yeah, Victor Appleton. That's what it is. Victor Appleton wrote Tom.
So the question remains: what does it mean when you say you look like the Bobbsey twins?
Well, the Bobbsey twins were twins. It was just
there were two sets of twins in the stories.
Oh boy!
One and they were hey, and their kids. Paternal.
Hey kids, this is stuff you need to know.
The main pair were paternal.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about this, because looking like the Bobbsey twins doesn't mean you're dressed alike.
Oh, I mean, really? Because that's the way I always interpret it. But maybe it's because you sound alike, like you're saying the same thing.
No, it's when you're wearing kind of frilly, girly stuff and you're a boy.
Oh, I don't know. Well, that's never the way I've used it.
All you have to do is look at the covers of all these. What did the Bobbsey twins always look like? Yeah, they're all wearing frilly crap. They look like, you know,
frilly crap.
The Bobbsey twins.
Yeah, they look like the Bobbsey twins. Wow, a lot to discuss today. Remember the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason, and plot, which seems to be forgotten.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, this was the plot on the British Parliament.
Proving the point that nobody remembers.
Plot on the British Parliament as documented in V for Victory, where everyone got the anonymous masks from. Have we forgotten this already?
Oh, yeah.
I guess so. Guy Fawkes Day. That's what it is. Will we still be lighting stuff up in the UK? Doubtful. They used to have bonfires. Doubtful. We can't do that anymore. That would be against the law.
No, it's polluting.
It's climate change. In addition, speaking of change, we had daylight saving time change.
We're doing the show at noon.
No, we're not. We're doing the show at 2. It's still unclear why the elites do this to us twice a year. It actually screwed up an appointment I had earlier in the week because Europe changed last weekend. This is what I've never understood. Why don't we all change on the same day globally? Do we have a different sun here than we have in
what you
in
want
the UK?
United Nations to determine this? You want one world government?
I'm on the fence. I mean, no, I don't want one world government. And there's still
that's what you're advocating right here.
No, you are feisty today.
Arg.
There is There's still no honest, you know, one answer to this hoax that they perpetrate upon
us.
What
about Arizona? Yeah. They got their own time. They have a complete warp. They're like, whatever time it is there, it's nowhere else.
It's insane. Before we get into everything today, I'd like to read a note from Knight Andrew. You received this note as well. I think it's important that we just discuss this for a moment.
Oh, that's this is not the good note.
This is the good note. Yeah, this is the good note.
No, the good notes call it the one that calls us dipshits.
No, he didn't call us dipshits. Take a look at what you've become. That's what that note was. No, yeah. This is from Knight Andrew. And it's good because we have been doing this for 16 years. We've seen this come and go. It's gotten progressively worse. The divide and conquer strategy of the global elitists evil, whatever that is. And it's taking hold to such a degree that some people are just falling right off the edge.
They do it at the drop of a hat.
At the drop of a hat.
All of our work goes for naught.
We've never been right about anything. How quickly they forget. So Knight Andrew says, I've been meaning to write you for a few weeks now. When you guys began your review of the Israel-Hamas conflict, I was rather disgusted at how you both blithely, good word, blithely.
It's a good word.
Blithely. What does blithely mean? Blithely.
It means nonchalantly.
Nonchalant. Blithely spoke about the atrocities Hamas perpetrated, even questioning the veracity of stories and videos. Visual evidence. Appreciating no agenda over the past year since 2020. So Knight Andrew is relatively new. And specifically your perspective on many controversial things. I was dismayed the way you guys approached this topic. I understand there have been other debatable topics that people have gone overboard for less. Would this be the straw for me? One of the initial episodes reviewing the heinous act of Hamas, you both seemed to challenge the veracity of claims of babies being beheaded and such. And no agenda went from the highlight of my listens to my
hate listen.
When I was in college, I called my mother during a mild snowstorm. She told me how my sister, younger than me, had gone out in the snow driving to her boyfriend's house. He was a lowlife, a worthless fellow. On her way, she... From blithely to worthless,
to get started
worthless
on
fellow.
The novel.
I like it. On her way, she crashed on the interstate, totaling her car. She was all right, but my mother indicted my sister. If she'd only listened, this wouldn't have happened. From that point on, I decided not to give another person the power of saying, I told you so, especially when I respect that person, given their insight and reputation. I'm not likely to heed some rando's advice, though. Anyway, when everything within me was revolting to continue to listen to No Agenda during that initial segment, I remembered the many letters and stories you have shared about weak-minded and weak-spirited people who were lost overboard because they heard something they didn't like. I did not want to be like them. The value and insight you have provided to me outweighed this offense. I didn't quit listening then, and I'm still up to date. Thank you for the work. Understanding and appreciating the alluded point that you guys are trying to be objective and question everything. You guys weren't exactly trying to two sides this as much as saying nothing can be trusted. Exactly. The Lord uses various means to bring people and keep people for himself and salvation. Similarly, reading often hate letters of douchebags who become radicalized is strangely a means of keeping me listening and ultimately keeping my sanity. Sincerely and grateful, Knight Andrew. And I want to thank you for that, and I want to just respond quickly because the one thing, you know, Alex Jones, the one thing I've always been envious about is that he has InfoWars, because that's really what's going on. InfoWars, and he's gone way beyond that, but the information wars that go on for our minds all day long is really what we're dealing with. We still, I would say, we maybe not you, but the rest of us all have trauma worldwide from COVID, from lockdowns, and it's used to control you. This trauma is particularly people who are, you know, who say they're woke and aren't obviously woke. It truly is MK Ultra without the drugs, and they probably have the drugs with SSRIs, etc. No Agenda listeners are just as susceptible. The people now in Paris, London, New York, Rome, the people protesting for Palestine are the very same people who told you to die for not being vaccinated or wearing a mask, who were allowed to riot and burn for BLM during COVID restrictions when no one else was allowed out. Remember that, the peaceful protests? Who accused many of you for committing genocide on LGBTQ people for not buying into the gender fluidity bullcrap, who support annihilating Russia from the economic world and using all weapons available to remove them from the map. These are the same people who are hysterical about climate change, which is about the fifth version of this blatant lie in my lifetime. It was global cooling, global warming. Then that didn't work out. We had climate change. It's also the same people who are going to move to Canada because Trump would destroy America. We're being abused. We're being abused by forces. It doesn't come down to one individual or group. Online video, M5M, social media. Yes, even No Agenda Social, without algos, are perfect carriers for this trauma-based entertainment. So we do our best not to pick sides in any of the things that we've been through. And it's been a lot. We do want to show you that all sides are full of crap. And meanwhile, pay attention to your own community, where you live. Have you been to a city recently? Have you taken a look around? It's not just New York or Chicago. You know, the people that are hanging down like zombies from Trank and fentanyl. It's in London. It's in Paris. It's in Amsterdam. But we're being taught to be obsessed over anything but your own situation. And it's all being abused by political powers.
I like the hello dipshits letter better.
do you have it in front of you?
I've been looking for it. I can't seem to find it.
The dipshits letter. So, there is a lot more going on besides Israel and Hamas. But, oh, my goodness, are we getting out of control with the Jew hate, the Arab hate, the people hate? This is just, check your people.
This is never ending. This was when I was a kid, when I was in college. And I will say, anybody out there who's like listening, who's like a millennial or a Z, when you're my age 70, you'll be hearing the same thing.
Yep. I'm 60 and I'm already like you. This is that's
how. Well, when you're 70, you'll be hearing the same thing.
And when I'm 70, I'll be 10 times worse than you.
That's unlikely.
You're right. It does seem unlikely.
I will say this about you, though. I've discovered an aspect of your personality.
Uh-oh. Is this good or bad? Is this a slammy?
Well, it depends on where you're coming from. It's good to some and bad to others.
All right.
So I realize that you have the personality, because when you're playing the opening stuff and you hit the button and you become the Freddy the Freeloader or whatever, the fire hydrant guy, and then the devil. You have the personality of a ventriloquist. That is what a ventriloquist would do.
Who are famous ventriloquists? Who was name some famous ventriloquist? Was Weird Al a ventriloquist? Seems like he would have been a ventriloquist.
No. There's Charlie McCarthy. The Charlie McCarthy character, the guy was the ventriloquist there. What's her name? The actress's dad was a ventriloquist.
Jeff Dunham. I know Jeff Dunham. Jeff Dunham.
That's Jeff Dunham's famous. There's other ones that go back in time that are more famous in those days. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of them.
Candace Bergen's dad?
Yeah, Edgar Bergen.
Edgar Bergen. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Troll Room. Obama had his hand up Biden's butt. It was a ventriloquist.
Yeah, Obama, totally a ventriloquist.
It's not who we are! Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about some protests for just a moment. And then I've seen you have the Middle East situation clips. I've examined the protests around the globe. And I have clips from TRT, which of course will give you the Arab perspective. Also from France 24, which who knows what their perspective is. Every single one of these protests has a lot of handmade signs, but overwhelmingly the organization is in charge of either the Socialist World Party or the Socialist Workers Party. This is a complete politically driven and organized event on a global scale, and they're pulling a lot off here. This is
I think they're doing a fabulous job.
Very good job. Here's TRT. This is Turkish radio and television.
As the humanitarian crisis in Gaza deepens, international displays of anger grow louder. A fourth weekend of demonstrations in London saw tens of thousands descend on Trafalgar Square. But right across Europe, popular discontent at Israel's bombardment of Gaza was visible. Similar numbers were seen in Paris, gathering near the Bastille. In Berlin, green and red smoke filled the roads where thousands waved Palestinian flags. And in Rome, thousands more walked behind banners calling the crisis in Gaza an apartheid. Outrage echoes through the streets at the soaring civilian death toll of Palestinians, but discontent here is rising too over how Western governments are dealing with the situation.
They know they want to tell us, well, we're not sure if these are war crimes. We think Israel has a right to defend itself, and then they have the problem that people are seeing on their TV screens, Palestinian children being pulled out of the rubble.
Dozens have been arrested at protests in the UK over the last 4 weeks. Authorities here and elsewhere warning that protesters may be breaking the law by publicly supporting Hamas.
British police have denied that tougher tactics have been the result of government pressure, but there has been significant criticism about how governments are dealing with these protests.
The UK's Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, has called the demonstrations hate marches and seemingly accused people of anti-Semitism. That's come as anti-Semitic incidents have risen across the world. There's also been a rise in Islamophobia. Protests in London and elsewhere have repeatedly been described by police as largely peaceful, but tensions could rise further. Marches are planned for November the 11th, when Europe commemorates the end of the First World War and remembers those killed in combat. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has said a pro-Palestinian protest then would be provocative and disrespectful. Others, however, have said the ultimate goal of government in Britain and perhaps elsewhere is to suppress these popular expressions of anger at what's happening in Gaza.
Guaranteed next Sunday it's going to kick off in the UK. Guaranteed that's going to be a good old time. And TRT, they're turning it political, of course.
In Jordan, the U.S. Secretary of State found no support for his country's position on the Israel-Gaza war.
Are we going to be talking about the wasteland? Are we going to be talking about a whole population reduced to refugees? Simply, we do not have all the variables to even start thinking about that.
But unlike his initial Middle East tour 3 weeks ago, Blinken repeatedly urged the protection of civilian lives.
Israel must take every possible measure to prevent civilian casualty. In my meetings with Israeli officials yesterday, I conveyed additional steps that they can and should take to do just that. Protecting civilians will help prevent Hamas from further exploiting the situation. But most important, it's simply the right and moral thing to do.
But those words may be
a moral way to wage war, people.
A little too late now that almost 10,000 Palestinians are dead.
Public opinion in the U.S. has shifted. Some say they're just no longer fearful of speaking out. And you can see that here in Washington, where tens of thousands have now come out to call not just for a ceasefire, but they say freedom and equality for all Palestinians. In this crowd, support for Joe Biden and the Democrats has eroded fast.
Genocide and Biden can go away. We need somebody who's actually for the people.
Not voting for Joe Biden. Probably not voting for Donald Trump.
The White House is aware of the fierce backlash from minority communities, including Arabs and Muslims, a key voting bloc that helped secure Biden's victory in 2020. The question now is what the president plans to do to regain their trust. Yasmin Al-Sabawi, TRT World, Washington.
Oh, yeah. These are BLM people, the same people that the Democrat Party weaponized over and over and over again, continue to do so with the trans Maoist. They lost control. This is my final report that I want to hear your clips. They definitely lost control of it. This was, again, Socialist Workers Party, the U.S. Palestinian Community Network, which is a very interesting organization. We organize around a number of campaigns, including BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, political prisoner advocacy, arts and culture events, and tours. and they're part of the Westpac Foundation, which now that's where I couldn't get much further. The Westpac is in Westchester County. They're the ones that are financing the U.S. Palestinian Community Network. And they've been around since 1974. As they say themselves on the website, since 1974, we've been educating, agitating, and organizing for more just and a peaceful world, an end to militarism and racism, and a more fair economy that works for all. Sound familiar? So here is the France 24 report, because everybody had a reporter on the street, Washington, D.C.
Yeah, well, this is a much bigger protest than expected. Freedom Plaza, which is just behind me, expected to have a couple of thousand people there. Tens of thousands showed up. They are now marching down the street away from the White House, heading towards the Capitol building kind of area. This is bigger than any other pro-Palestine protest that I've seen in the two or so weeks that I've been covering these protests. The couple that I've seen before were organized by pro-Jewish groups. This one is a much more broad coalition, a real mixture of people. We've seen a sea of flags here, people wearing the keffiyeh headscarves, that symbol of Palestinian resistance, and people praying in the streets, lying down on prayer mats to pray during the middle of this protest movement. We've seen lots of Palestinian Americans, but not just Palestinian Americans. It's been a significant chunk of people here who are young people, it must be said. A lot of them have been under the age of 30, I would say, and also some Jewish groups as well who are showing support for the Palestinian cause. We've also seen a couple of signs saying Latinos for Palestine as well. So it really is quite a mixed bag of people here who showed up in Washington, D.C. Now, the messages that these people have been carrying, you can see some of them behind me, are just as mixed as the people themselves. We've got everything from free Palestine, that has been the main message of this movement, to more extreme signs as well. But the main thing that people here are calling for is a ceasefire now. Well, we know that that is something that Joe Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu have so far not agreed to.
It's people looking for allyship. They were bussing them in from Chicago. Bussing them in from Chicago.
Yeah, that makes you wonder.
Here's 21 seconds.
Bussing in the ballots.
Yeah. Here's a protester going nuts.
This is an apartheid. This is racism. This is not anti-Semitism. This is humanity. Stop the death of children and babies. Stop the murder. Be on the right side of history.
Man, the baby stuff, that's really what got people. And the ripping babies from wombs, the beheading babies, the burning babies, using them as hockey pucks, whatever you could make up.
Isn't the sheep bitching about the Jews blowing up babies?
Yeah, killing babies. Killing babies.
Babies.
It babies always works.
Yeah, babies is a winner.
It doesn't matter whether it's true or not.
You want to marry some woman, go and when you see a baby around her, go, oh, I love babies. Boom.
Is that how you got Mimi?
No.
No.
I'm just telling you it works.
That's a story for another day. For another day. So, so what do you got? You have a lot of Middle
First
East
I want to go
stuff.
Back to the guy who called us dipshits. And then he... bitched about
you found the
fact
letter? You found the letter?
No, I can't find it. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I thought I put it aside, but
was that the one in response to the newsletter? Is that the one?
Yeah, because he didn't like Hansen, Victor David Hansen, which I put in there. It's an hour lecture, and he says, war, 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 you guys have lost your touch. You're all for war, when the Victor David Hansen thing was not about war. It was about mentalities. And it had a bunch of interesting insights. If you could sit down and spend an hour listening to him, and if you can put up with him, his presentation is somewhat droll. But I have one clip from him.
I have the email here. Would you like me to read the email?
Oh, yes, please read.
You dipshits have your head so deep up your asses on Israel-Palestine. You literally sent us a Victor Davis Hansen video and told us it's good. Please look at what you've become. This is a straight hour of war propaganda.
Yeah. Well, he obviously didn't listen to the thing.
No, he didn't. And I am definitely not a fan of Victor Davis Hansen. But what he explained is literally what I just explained right now. It is we have radicalized in universities, certainly in the United States, but probably around the world, but without a doubt, the higher education. And I saw this with my stepdaughters. You know, the programming is so strong, and it's been going on for a long time.
Oh, yeah. It was going on when I was at Cal Berkeley. And I didn't, I mean, I broke out of it, obviously. I'm not following that those things anymore, but I was accidentally taught how to think. So I ended up breaking away from it. But they were arguing the Palestinians. And so just, I only have the one clip. I could have clipped a lot of the Hansen thing, but it's so, and it takes so much massaging. Because he's talking like this, then he talks like this, and he's talking like it's up and down, and you got to go in and boost it and drop it, and it's a nightmare.
And he had all of the memes in there, by the way. He had all of the beheading babies and all that stuff, and he was using that. But beside that, his message about the universities and how this group and the previous group and from what you're saying, the group before that have all been mind controlled, and it's part of the anti-colonialism. Like, I'm an American, but I'm a colonialist. I'm bad. I'm white. I'm horrible.
Self-hate. He makes the point. There's he says the proportionality. He makes it, but this is not the clip I'm going to play. The clip I'm going to play is about Hamas. But he also talked about something I thought was very profound, the way he pointed out that Blinken and Biden are telling the Jews to be careful, be proportionate,
Ukraine, meanwhile, go ahead, kill them. Let's do as much
kill
as we can.
Kill all Russians.
Russians must die. Here's some more cool new weapons we got. What are you drinking? Did you just open your drink?
I did nothing.
Oh, I thought I heard a drink open. I'm sorry.
Continue. No, there's a train coming. Maybe you're hearing a train honk. It sounds like a drink.
Mm-hmm.
So he points out, he says, the only reason this could possibly exist is the difference between our attitude toward Ukraine and the one toward Israel is Jew hate. The American government hates Jews, and or the Democratic Party does. Somebody does. And I think this clip I have here, which talks about how Jew hate is really at the basis for this whole thing. It's got nothing to do with anything else. And it's extremely disappointing if any of this is true, because it's like, geez, you know, we went through we're still putting up with the discussions about the Holocaust. We thought we'd get over that, and the Jews are, you know, they're obviously not running the media, or we wouldn't be having this kind of discussion. So that idea is down the drain.
They're not running it well.
They're not doing a very good job. So, but listen to this analysis of, and I'll tell you the thesis, and you can kind of pick it out of here. But the thesis is that Hamas was becoming unpopular in Gaza until they decided to start killing Jews. The entire population, all the Palestinians, and I believe this could easily be true, the Palestinians hate Jews. They just hate them. And I said on the previous show, the Jews don't like the Arabs either. So you have this cross, you know, this Hatfield-McCoy thing going on that is
Forever, before you and I were on the earth, 2,000 years, this has been going on forever.
Hansen. So here we go.
Yeah, Hansen on Hamas, sidebar, that's the one?
Yeah.
Yes, there are a lot of innocent Gazans, but the 1988 charter predated that election. And in the charter, it says that they're not interested in negotiations. They're interested in jihad to destroy Israel. And they voted for it. And yes, it is corrupt. And yes, it's true, as a recent article, I think this week in Foreign Affairs, pointed out, that the popularity of Hamas has declined. But was the popularity of Hamas declining because it was corrupt, it didn't give services, or was it not sufficiently killing Jews? My point is this, is that when they went in to Israel, this unpopular, supposedly hated government, which we're told, if Israel bombs Hamas sites in Gaza, you're going to alienate them and make them like Hamas. If they don't like them now, if they don't like them so much, why did hundreds follow through the hole in the fence? Kind of like irregulars that followed the Gestapo in Eastern Europe. And they tagged along to rape and to loot and to take captives. And why, when they brought captives in the streets of Gaza, why couldn't you just find one Gazan who intervened and said, don't desecrate that Israeli corpse? Do not, that poor woman is bleeding from her genital area. Do not spit at her. Not one. Not one. And so the argument that there's a captive Gazan population that is furious at Hamas, and you're only going to drive them close to Hamas when they otherwise would reject them. I don't see any evidence for it. I see a lot of evidence that say, I like Hamas now because they finally went and did something, and that do something is killing Jews on the offensive. And they were giddy about it. And the people who support them in the West were giddy about it. Again, it took them a nanosecond to go, yes, fly the flags, you're killing Jews, finally.
Now, perception is reality, and here he began, he's with the, you know, the genitals, bleeding from the genitals, which have, we don't know exactly what was going on there, but that's beside the point. But he is responding to Telegram videos. Who knows? I mean, that's the information war that I'm talking about, so... Maybe they were.
Yeah, well,
maybe
the they point, were. I think is real.
His point is
the real exclamation point was the fact that once this happened, the protests in the United States cropped up immediately.
Yes.
With flags, with pre-printed signs, the whole thing across the country, and they were all, you know, cheering.
We really missed out on the No Agenda shop with those scarves. What an opportunity missed.
Those carbs.
What an opportunity. Those things. They're flying. They're selling like hotcakes. But not just America. And, you know, for Germans, this is polarizing. This is, and, you know, and part of what's happening is because of the millions of illegal migrants they have allowed to come into their country. But when it starts happening in Austria...
Vienna's Central Cemetery, the second biggest in Europe. A fire destroyed a room in the Jewish part. On a wall close by, anti-Semitic writing. A shock for Austria.
It's really a despicable act. Anti-Semitism towards the deceased is something outrageous. Jews today are very worried. Many are afraid to be recognized in the street.
Since the Hamas attack on Israel, anti-Semitic acts have multiplied in Austria. Benjamin Negle has been recording such incidents for 4 years, and he's noticed a marked increase.
We have recorded and verified 165 acts since the 7th of October. That's four times as many as during the same period last year. We have insults, especially on the internet, but also physical attacks and harassment.
As a sign of support, thousands of people gathered 2 days ago to denounce anti-Semitism while recalling the participation of Austria in Nazi crimes.
We all thought such things would never happen again, especially in Vienna, because Austria carries a high burden of guilt.
We have a responsibility that transfers from generation to generation to show that we learned from the horror.
In the face of the threat, Austria has raised its terrorism alert level and has increased protection of Jewish institutions.
It's really unbelievable. I grew up in these countries. It's like, no, we can never let that happen. How did that happen? How was it possible that we all started to hate the Jews? How was it possible?
We didn't. Nothing. This hasn't changed. It's all these immigrants that they brought in. It's almost like a scheme.
Kalergi plan.
And in fact, the Victor David Hansen, near the end of that lecture, when he talks about the universities, how they've been usurped by the green card kids who have been brought over from the Middle East and, you know, allowed to go nuts. And it's about time. And this has happened in a couple of hearings I think it was in the Senate, about to Mallorca. Because he had one of his employees. I don't have a clip of it. I should have gotten a clip of
Mallorca's? Yeah.
Mallorca's got one employee who went off the deep end condemning Jews.
You don't have that clip? What?
I guess I should have had that clip. That was a mistake. Anyway, Hawley's just going after him like crazy, and he won't fire the woman. Well, she's on administrative paid leave. And it's... She's not a towner. If you bring a bunch of out of towners in here who hate Jews, and then they hate Jews as a result, Who's to blame?
What's Chuck Schumer's take on all this? Where's he? Don't see much of Chuck Schumer.
Well, he's a Democrat, and he probably relies on votes from Jew haters. That's my guess.
By the way, I just want to say, people, you can stop with the Albert Pike letter. Have you heard this? I think we've probably dealt with this before.
No.
Albert Pike wrote a lot of letters. And supposedly he wrote a letter that said there will be three world wars and, you know, everything that's happening now is that exact letter. That letter I have not been able to find. If you can find the so-called three world wars letter from Albert Pike, please send it to me and show me a good origin story, because I have not been able to find it.
Yeah, it's probably BS.
I think it's bullcrap. I think it is.
Whatever happened to Nostradamus?
Yeah,
that guy's getting kicked to the curb.
he hasn't had something right in a while. Well, the White House is—they have a national strategy, and they're straddling. It's like,
they got issues because they got the squad who are all Jew haters. Just to, let's call it what it is. They are. I mean, nobody can argue that. And it's not. No, we don't dislike Jews. AOC, we just hate Israel, and all Jews in Israel should die.
AOC is just dumb. You're just dumb.
But she's dumb.
It's all. But I think the true learnings comes from America bad anti, you know, colonialism, and that's just exported into. Well, clearly that's, you know, clearly. The Israeli state was just a colonial move, and it's the very people who that they love. United Nations did this.
I know.
They literally did this.
This is the joke of it.
And part of it was because of the last cycle of Jew hate. You know, hey, sorry about the trains and everything. Here's a country, and we'll call it a day. So, you know, but the Ottoman Empire is not even taught anymore. It's just overlooked, you know, and I'm a little tired of it's a genocide. It's almost like, you know, certain terms have been overused, like Nazi.
Again,
like Nazi.
In that hour-long lecture, Hansen has a very good explanation for why this is a bad term in these situations.
Well, I mean, when we're told that, you know, stopping children from being medically castrated without their parents' consent is LGBTQ genocide, these terms lose their meaning. They lose their meaning.
That's a local phenomenon. Yeah,
it's not. It's not local.
It's pretty local.
It's everywhere. It's all over Western Europe.
The genocide aspect of the LGBTQ plus. Seems pretty localized to me. I'm not seeing the kind of TikTok videos coming out of Argentina that are bitching and moaning about it.
Oh, I do have a TikTok video thing about this. This
what?
One, yeah. This is TRT. Little compilation they got from TikTok of very good-looking Jewish American girls.
I was taught that Israel were the victims and that these Palestinian people were like almost like these annoying people who would not leave them alone.
As I keep researching and learning about what's happening in Palestine right now, I can't stop crying.
This is a call-in to all Jews who support Palestine. When did you realize that the Zionist mythology of Israel was a lie?
And why do so many Jews support Israel despite it committing war crimes against Palestinians? And the truth is, we're not fed accurate information.
Because despite all these things that are happening in Gaza, I've not seen any footage of Palestinian people cursing Jewish people or Israeli people.
Seeing what is happening in Palestine right now and seeing how these Palestinians literally are thanking God as they're losing everything, I would be questioning my faith if my entire family just got wiped off. I need to figure that out, because I'm intrigued.
I mean, you've got to question the algorithms that these girls are trapped into at this point. Yeah, I'm researching.
It's the same. It doesn't even have to be an algorithm. This is the same mentality as, oh, yeah, get in the boxcar. What's the worst that could happen?
Well, Jesus comes soon. Is what I say.
That ain't gonna happen.
This world is broken. Might think so, but no. If I may, no, I don't actually. But you know, if you look at sermons on the internet, oh my God. Ezekiel 38, 39, this is it. This is the final one. Wait until Russia gets involved. I mean, no. There's a lot. This is exporting to all religions. Everybody's freaking out. Everybody's freaking out. I've heard literal sermons. Oh, and then comes the Pike letter. Like, what?
The Pike letter.
Yes, in sermons. So, you know.
If they're bringing in, that's superstition.
Yes. But but that's also on YouTube and TikTok. You know, it's not a good product, this internet. It's bringing us bad stuff.
I've said this from very early on.
Yes. Yeah.
I have documented saying that this thing should be shut down.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen, of course.
But it's too late now.
But what always amazes me is No Agenda Social. I see the same thing without algorithms. Just because people can argue.
I think you're making the point that it's not the algorithms.
In this case, yeah. Yeah.
No, I think it's not the algorithms in any case.
Okay, so it's just pure mind control, traumatized people. Traumatized. And then anything that has to do with a dead baby or killing of a baby is, oh, well, half of these people protesting can't have babies anymore. Give me a break. Give me a break.
There's your irony.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at this Pike stuff.
No, don't bother. Don't bother with the Pike. Here's the buses from Chicago. This kind of irked me.
Right now, thousands from all over the country are heading to Washington, D.C. for what's expected to be the largest demonstration since the start of the Israel-Hamas war, including dozens who boarded these buses tonight in Chicago. Our Charlie DeMar caught up with another large group from our area making the trip.
What do we want?
Hearing flags, signs, and the power of their collective voices.
We have rights to be free. We have rights to have our own country. Otherwise, there'd be no peace whatsoever.
In Bridgeview, two busloads of Palestinian supporters boarded for the roughly 12-hour drive to D.C. Downtown, another two buses also left for our nation's capital for what's expected to be the largest U.S.-Palestinian solidarity march on Saturday.
We are not going to sit here and silently allow for them to take part in supporting Israel with this the war.
And from talking to a number of people who are aboard this bus headed to Washington, D.C., they are calling for a ceasefire and an end of the United States supporting the Israeli government.
We're frustrated because our tax dollars are going to fund this genocide.
On October 7th, Hamas militants attacked Israel. At least 1,400 people, according to the Israeli government, were brutally murdered, and about 240 hostages were taken. The United States and President Biden have fully supported Israel and its right to defend itself.
Nice.
So far, more than 9,000 Palestinians have been killed, according to Gaza's health ministry. This week, President Biden called for a humanitarian pause, but not a ceasefire.
For me, this is just another chapter in what it means to be Palestinian.
So what?
We are Gaza.
There's a non-Palestinian American white girl saying, this is just another chapter on what it is to be Palestinian. Fill in the blank, girl. Black, gay, whatever group. Where are the chants for the homeless? Where are the chants for the 100,000 opioid deaths? Where are the chants for the dirty, rat-infested cities that we're living with? Where are the chants for the potholes? Any chant of anything.
The potholes are getting so big, there's homeless living in them.
Well, there's a solution. At least something. That's something.
Yeah. You know. Okay, I got a bunch of clips there.
All right.
First of all, let's get this. Well, no, let's do Dems bailing. This is Me War. Dems bailing on Israel 1.
Hold on a second. Oh, got it. Here.
More Democrats are voicing concerns about the way the Israeli military is approaching their objective to wipe out Hamas after the terrorist group launched an attack on Israeli civilians. Senator Chris Murphy, who sits on a Middle East subcommittee, said in a statement, "The current rate of civilian death inside Gaza is unacceptable and unsustainable. I urge Israel to immediately reconsider its approach and shift to a more deliberate and proportionate counterterrorism campaign." Congressman Jason Crow has also expressed concerns about an Israeli strike aimed at taking out a Hamas military leader. This mission killed civilians in a highly populated refugee camp, which Hamas had dug tunnels under. And we asked lawmakers how they feel about their colleagues criticizing Israel's military operations. We did get mixed reactions, but the vast majority of Democrats that we heard from said that others should be more thoughtful about the specific details in this war.
Contrary to the rules of war, they've hidden behind the Palestinian people. They've embedded themselves in hospitals and churches in order to create an inability of Israel to get at their enemy, Hamas.
You know, Israel needs to be careful, obviously, about, you know, going after one commander by taking out a whole building. That's something they do have to look at. And so I agree with Jason that that one, you know, could be problematic. But again, problematic. That's what happens in war. That's why this was so outrageous what Hamas did to those innocent civilians in Israel.
When you're done with your clips, I have a short sequence about the rules of war, because this is now what's on deck. The rules of war, the proportionality of war. All of a sudden, we have these rules that we didn't have these rules for Ukraine, for Vietnam, or for any other war. But now we have rules. You can't be like just killing people. This, we have rules.
Let's skip over to the Me War Update 1 on PBS.
The Israeli military
says... this is update. This is from yesterday afternoon.
The Israeli military says it's closing in on Gaza City, ground zero in the war to crush Hamas. And tonight, America's top diplomat is in the region trying to ease the Palestinian civilian suffering. UN officials warn of malnutrition and starvation in Gaza, saying the average resident is surviving on just 2 pieces of bread a day. In Washington, D.C. and other world capitals, including Berlin, Paris, and London, pro-Palestinian marches and rallies called for an immediate ceasefire. And late today, Hamas said that more than 60 of the hostages its fighters took during the October 7th assault on Israel are missing after Israeli bombing, a claim that could not be immediately verified.
Yeah.
So there's two pieces of bread as a meme. It's going around.
Yeah. I'm for ceasefire, too. I mean, you and I are both very anti-war. I mean, I'd stop right away. Just stop. That would be great. But that's not really what they're calling for.
That's not going
to
happen.
That's not really what they're calling for either.
Just to stop, that's not going to happen.
No.
These guys are out of control. And both sides. And... let's go to part two of this clip.
In the Gaza Strip, a United Nations school near the northern Jabalia refugee camp offered little refuge to those within. Airstrikes hit tents in the schoolyard and an area where women were baking bread. 18,000 people are sheltering there.
Where should I go? They have hit the shelters. Those who are on the street in Gaza are hit while walking. Since when has it become normal to strike shelters? This is so unfair.
The UN Refugee Agency could not verify the number of people killed, but the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry put it at 15.
Okay, now this clip was weird to me. They showed visuals. This is a crowded area with 18,000 people. And the, even Gaza, the health ministry said there were 15 killed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does that work?
I always love, it sounds such a dichotomy when you hear the number of deaths according to the health ministry. Somehow it's a weird thing.
It's ironic.
It's very ironic.
But 18 dead out of area jammed. They show the visual here on PBS.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people, and 18 were somehow... What was it? Somebody throw a hand grenade in the crowd? Or, I mean, the numbers don't add up.
It's just trauma. Just give people trauma. Just show some dead people, show some people under rubble, show some babies, add words.
By the way, for the people that bitch and moan about our analysis, because we're dipshits, we want to remind you of the...
That really irked you, didn't it? That's really bothered you.
Term I like to use.
Oh, I see.
But it reminds us of the analysis we did and just caught it immediately of the people coughing up white goop during the so-called gas attack in
Syria. The Syrian gas attack, yes. Well,
and they're shaking and they're shaking and it turned out there was nothing going on.
It was phony.
The whole thing was staged. But this number 18, they could have done better than that. If you have 18,000 people jammed in an area and 18 get killed.
15.
That's not from a missile.
15, they said. 15, not even 18. 15.
It wasn't even 18. It was 15.
And they look very hungry because only two pieces of bread a day.
Only two pieces of bread. There's this.
And the Jews play clip three, and then I have one.
Clip three, and then I have one more meme to discuss.
This boy says he carried a decapitated body away from the scene. Palestinians also searched for survivors of an airstrike on a residential area in the southern city of Khan Yunis.
We are steadfast in Gaza. Even if only one citizen is left, from there, the state will start again.
As the civilian death toll rises, the Israeli military maintains it is only targeting Hamas fighters. The Israel Defense Forces released new footage today.
I just have to say that just listening to this and in the previous clip that I played, they are using, and I know what the visuals are, they're just using explosions to rock your mind into thinking, well, that's bullcrap. When they say, no, we're not targeting civilians. Boom, explosion. That is programmatic mind control right there.
As the civilian death toll rises, the Israeli military maintains it is only targeting Hamas fighters. The Israel Defense Forces released new footage today of what it said were forces blowing up Hamas tunnels and clearing access routes for vehicles. In Amman, Jordan, Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with his regional counterparts. They urged him to push for an immediate ceasefire, but Blinken stopped short, reiterating his call for humanitarian pauses.
Yeah, pauses.
I want to mention another thing in that last clip. They show a kid who's 12 years old, if he's a day, and he's the one who says, I had to carry a decapitated, not headless, but decapitated, which means it was somebody chopped his head off. Person, and he was upset about having to do this. Wait, he's in an area of 18,000 people. Why is a 12-year-old responsible for carrying the decapitated person around
and
or off to someplace else? It makes no sense. These reports don't make sense if you just listen to them.
But it's trauma. It's all trauma. Can we talk about go ahead.
So anyway, here's the other meme that's been going around about the ambulance.
The ambulance story.
So the ambulance story, which is like, and they show the ambulance. The ambulance looks like it ran into something. The ambulance wasn't hit by a missile. I don't know what happened to this ambulance, but the story keeps going around. And here's the NTD version of the ambulance story.
In the Israel-Hamas war, an ambulance from the main hospital in Gaza was struck. Palestinian sources say it left several people dead. NTD's Jason Perry has the details. And a warning, this report contains footage that some viewers may find disturbing.
On Friday, another deadly scene shook the streets of Gaza City as crowds of people were seen running in all directions. This time, an ambulance was struck. A spokesperson for the Hamas-run health ministry blamed Israel.
We announced to the world that this convoy is heading to the south at 4 o'clock, and we informed the related parties, including the International Red Cross, and we asked the Red Cross to escort the convoy.
But Israel Defense Forces did not deny responsibility for striking the ambulance. The IDF released this statement on Telegram. An IDF aircraft struck an ambulance that was identified by forces as being used by a Hamas terrorist cell in close proximity to their position in the battle zone. A number of Hamas terrorist operatives were killed in the strike. We have information which demonstrates that Hamas's method of operation is to transfer terror operatives and weapons in ambulances. The IDF also emphasized that the area is a battle zone, and civilians are repeatedly called upon to evacuate south for their own safety. But even after the IDF's repeated warnings, Palestinian civilians still remain in the area. Secretary of State Antony Blinken flew to Israel on Thursday to speak with Israeli leadership about the issue of civilian casualties. And he also noted that Hamas uses civilians as human shields.
And if you remember the Julian Assange released video of our U.S. gunship, not just shooting at civilians from the air, but then blowing them up, including journalists. And then when the ambulance arrived, they shot at the ambulance.
Yeah,
this that is was war. Us. War is ugly business.
And the guys are yucking it up.
Well, that's not that part, but it's ugly, ugly business. I have the CNN version of this report. Let's listen to that.
Well, Wolf, Israel is admitting to have targeted an ambulance inside Gaza near Al-Shifa Hospital. The Israeli Defense Forces saying that claiming that this ambulance was being used by Hamas and saying that several Hamas operatives were killed in this strike, Wolf. But the reports on the ground, obviously those images are just absolutely difficult to see. 15 mm-hmm. people were killed in this strike. 50 others were wounded, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, which of course is controlled by Hamas. Israel also says in its claim of responsibility that Hamas has been known to use ambulances to transport Hamas militants as well as weaponry. But Wolf, there are questions about the legitimacy of this target, particularly as a spokesman for the Palestinian Ministry of Health says that this ambulance was part of a convoy carrying wounded individuals who were heading to that Rafah crossing in order to leave Gaza and head into Egypt. And what's more, Wolf, they also say that they notified the International Red Cross of this convoy movement before it left. The Red Cross, Wolf, tonight is confirming that it did receive notification about this convoy before this convoy left, and that it received a request to accompany that convoy before it left.
I got to play these rules of war, this bull crap.
Oh, wait, we got to talk about these clips. That clip, it leaves a bunch of unanswered questions.
Sure does.
First of all, what was the Red Cross doing getting involved, and what did they actually do?
It should be the Red Crescent, not the Red Cross.
And well, the Red Crescent is like an adjunct of the Red. Yes. The two are slightly yes. related. But this be kind of beside the point, because this is like a press release. There's no information whatsoever in here.
No.
Why is Hamas using the ambulances? Why don't they just scatter around? Because the thing about Hamas is that you can't tell Hamas because they look like regular Palestinians. There's no difference. They don't wear uniforms. They don't. There's nothing to identify them. They might have guns, but Palestinians could have guns. I mean, this reporting on this is terrible.
It's a meme. The human shields is a meme. Humans are very bad shields, by the way. Bullets go through them. You know, there's nothing that the human shields is dumb. It really is.
Yeah, we've seen
but you're right.
Movies.
This is all memes. It's babies decapitated, human shields. All of it is a meme, and it's all meant to trigger people. It's not reporting. It's just not reporting, especially not from CNN. All right, so this is NPR. Then now they're talking to Tom Dannenbaum. Tom Dannenbaum is a professor of international law. And a lot of the questions I have about international law are asked and to a degree answered in this series of clips. What are the rules of war?
Can you briefly walk us through what are the key laws that might apply to an incident like this in a densely populated urban area?
Yeah, there are a set of rules that one has to comply with in this kind of situation. The first is the rule of distinction, which means targeting military objectives and not civilians or civilian objects. Second, the prohibition on indiscriminate attacks, which is to say that one has to have a discrete military target.
Well, you can stop right there. How does that explain Dresden?
No, it doesn't explain. It's only when you want to shame somebody that you can pull out the international rule of law. And we'll get to what that is in a moment. But it's just, you know, this was never used. I mean, we've never adhered to international law. Look at Iraq. Look at the Gulf War.
Well, the fact that we still have a base in Syria. That's what I'd like to know. What the hell is that doing there?
Second, the prohibition on indiscriminate attacks, which is to say,
how does that work for Nagasaki, Hiroshima? Was that all under the international rule of law?
That one has to have a discrete military target, not target an area in which there are military objectives, but also civilian populations and civilian objects.
Mm-hmm.
Third, that one has to take adequate precautions, which is to say, do everything feasible to minimize the expected civilian loss of life, injury, and damage to civilian objects. And finally, not to engage in the attack at all if the civilian loss of life, injury, or damage to civilian objects that would be expected from the attack would be excessive in relation to the military advantage that the commander authorizing the attack anticipates from that attack.
Yeah, blah, blah. So, of course, we need to not think for a moment about the dance party. You know, I think there were some civilians who were killed or injured.
It was all
there.
Civilians.
So let's get into...
You're talking about the Vegas shooting?
No, I was talking about the dance party, the rave. Anyway, let's move on. Who makes these laws? This has been one of my main questions. Who determines all these laws?
Who makes these laws?
Oh, thank you for asking that finally, NPR.
Wow.
These laws are codified in various treaties going back to the Geneva Conventions and updated in the additional protocols to those conventions in 1977. But also they are embedded in what's called customary international law, which is the practice of states understood by those states to be legally determined, which is reflected in how states articulate these rules in their military handbooks and in other expressions of their understanding of the law.
Our military handbook. Oh, this is where we have to talk to JAG on the field. Excuse me. Is this, can I fire? Is it okay? Is it legal? Is it all right? Can I do this?
Yeah. And then the follow-up question, who enforces these laws?
Oh, good question.
Well, there are various ways they can be enforced. They can be enforced by domestic courts, either within the state that is engaged in a particular action or indeed in any other state. And additionally, in this particular context, the International Criminal Court has jurisdiction over any war crimes occurring.
The International Criminal Court. Okay. That's a joke.
On the territory of Gaza. And that includes, in this particular context, the crime of engaging in a disproportionate attack.
Disproportionate.
Loss of life or injury or damage to civilian objects would be clearly excessive in relation to the military advantage anticipated.
And you'll hear this time and time again. It's like, well, it's disproportionate. That's not fair. War is war. War is ugly. War is horrible. Oh, you're not doing war right.
Israel says, look, we have been warning civilians to leave this area.
This is another one of them. Yeah, you know, hey, it's fair because we told them. We told them we're going to blow you up. We told them. It's fair. It's okay. It's all right.
In Gaza. And Israel also says, we have the right to defend ourselves. From a legal perspective, how much weight do those defenses have?
The first thing to say is that acting in self-defense doesn't justify acting without constraint. The law of armed conflict, including all of the rules that I mentioned earlier, apply as much to the actor engaged in self-defense as any actor engaged in aggression. Both are restrained by the same set of the rules on the conduct of hostilities. The second thing to say is, with respect to warning...
So that's your Victor David Hansen argument. Did Ukraine not send drones to blow up buildings where people lived in Moscow? I mean, all of this is so hypocritical.
The second thing to say is, with respect to warnings, issuing warnings can be part of the required precautions that I mentioned, taking all feasible measures to minimize civilian harm that would be expected from an attack. But complying with the rule on precautions does not itself relieve the duty to comply with the other rules.
All right. So what he's saying here is Israel is right because Israel went,
hey, look out with that ambulance. We're going to shoot it up. I'm going to blow it up.
So they did good there, but proportionality.
Hey, I'm curious, for someone with your background, as you followed news of this incident, what are the questions that spring to mind?
Well, the biggest question that springs to mind is, what exactly did they expect in terms of the civilian casualties? They seem to be very high for the targeting of a single commander. The second question is, who was that specific commander? What was the specific military advantage anticipated from taking that individual out? And the third question that I think is worth bearing in mind when making the proportionality calculation or performing an analysis of proportionality is...
You should have said calculus. That would have been better.
Yeah. Would the same decision have been made were the civilians that were harmed in this particular context Israeli civilians? Civilians are protected as civilians, regardless of nationality, regardless of the party with which they're associated.
Yeah, okay. For those who wonder, that was Mary Louise Kelly who was asking the questions. Mary Louise! Mary Louise. So I find it very tiring that everyone is all worked up. War is war. War is ugly. War is crap. War is horrible. John and I are anti-war, always have been, always will be. I don't like wars. But the way people are getting worked up about this one, it is by design.
Yeah.
Being controlled.
Spun up is the word.
Spun up is the term.
Term.
A clip custodian found an interesting interview with Scott Ritter, which I think is worth playing because something that is lost amongst all this is how did the so-called brilliant Israeli defense allow this to happen?
Oh, before we play that, let me get my last two clips out of the way.
Sure, sure.
Because I think they'll fit in.
Okay.
We have to, since we're dealing with memes, we got to get crypto into the act.
Oh, yeah, the finance by crypto. Yeah, okay. Let me see.
So I have two clips here, and I think you'll be amused.
I'm sure I will be.
This is the overview. This is Crypto One overview.
Ali Rogan tells us how terrorist groups try to use cryptocurrency to avoid banks and launder money and how law enforcement is responding.
Experts in terrorist financing say the military wing of Hamas was an early adopter of cryptocurrency, soliciting Bitcoin donations starting in 2019. Hamas told supporters that the transactions were anonymous, but all cryptocurrency exchanges are recorded on a public ledger called a blockchain. That allowed the Department of Justice to confiscate 150 crypto accounts associated with Hamas's Al-Qassam brigades in 2020. In April 2023, Hamas announced it would stop Bitcoin fundraising efforts. But as the Treasury Department's new sanctions show, terrorist groups including Hamas, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS are still finding ways to use cryptocurrency exchanges to raise and launder money and evade detection.
Oh, that's fantastic. By this report, which is PBS, I guess, by this logic, the majority of the Democrat Party and a large share of the Republican Party can be deemed to be terrorists as they were taking literal cryptocurrencies as donations from Sam Bankman-Fried.
I think they should be arrested.
We're going to talk about that in a minute. Let's play your second.
Well, anyway, so the second half, they bring an expert on who's just run some crypto, forensics company.
Crypto dude.
And he kind of has, unfortunately, he has a style of speaking, which I found not interesting.
I'm joined now by Ari Redbord. He's the global head of policy at TRM Labs, a blockchain analytics company that helps protect organizations against crypto-related fraud and financial crime. He's also a former senior Treasury official and a former federal prosecutor. Ari, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
What makes cryptocurrency so attractive to terrorist organizations?
Yeah, no.
What do we know about Hamas's use of cryptocurrency now, as versus back in 2019 when they started raising these funds that way?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
What, if any, vulnerabilities exist that Hamas might exploit in the future?
Yeah, no, look. You're saying yeah, while you're saying no.
Yeah, no. You know. All right, very good. A little bit of humor. Well, good. I'm going to take it around. I'm going to go into crypto, and I'll bring it right back to Hamas and Israel. So, as I just said, the Democrats and Republicans both, but majority Democrats, through his mother's super PAC, this is the worst part, through his mother's super PAC, were taking hundreds of millions of dollars in donations in FTX tokens, FTT, a literal cryptocurrency, that was, as far as I'm concerned, stolen money being laundered right into political coffers.
Yeah.
And but that's not the story anymore. No, they've taken this autistic young man who clearly was abused by his parents. This is my opinion. I have no proof. But as far as I can tell, including his dad saying, "Hey, Sam, what is this $250,000 salary I'm getting? I thought it was going to be $2 million." Abused by his parents for political gain to fund through, I forget the name of it, but it's, you know, we'll get to what kind of organization that is, but a super PAC that helps fund political operatives. But then, no, that's not what we're going to do. The whole government is complicit in nailing this kid's balls to the wall.
A stunning fall from grace for Sam Bankman-Fried. The cryptocurrency golden boy was found guilty of stealing billions of dollars of customers' money in one of the biggest financial frauds in U.S. history. The jury reached its decision in just 5 hours, putting an end to his month-long fraud and conspiracy trial.
It's a warning, this case, to every single fraudster out there who thinks that they're untouchable or that their crimes are too complex for us to catch.
They make this kid sound like a mastermind. Look at the transcripts of what they discuss. The kid is an autistic moron. He really is. He has mental development issues.
Whether they're too powerful for us to prosecute or that they could try to talk their way out of it when they get caught. Those folks should think again and cut it out. And if they
cut it out. Wow, that's an Obamaism. I don't know where that guy's from. They cut it out.
And cut it out. And if they don't, I promise we'll have enough handcuffs for all of them.
Except for the parents.
SBF, as he's known, is accused of stealing from the accounts of his FTX clients, using customer deposits to make investments, purchase real estate, and repay investors of his hedge fund, Alameda Research. When FTX collapsed in November, $8 billion in customer funds were missing, all vanished into investments at Alameda. Bankman-Fried defended the money transactions between his firms as permissible and claimed he'd been unaware of the financial hole until October last year, just a few weeks before the bankruptcy. But former members of SBF's inner circle testified that he instructed Alameda to raid his customers' deposits on FTX virtually without limit. SBF's lawyer says he will continue to fight the charges. The 31-year-old, who is estimated to be worth several billion dollars at the height of his fame, now faces up to 110 years in prison. His sentence will be delivered in March.
So I don't know if they're ever going to look into Alameda, where all that money went, because that was that's the true vehicle that was used. We'll see. Everyone else, just plead guilty. Yes.
Mimi's been following this closely, and she says that the government is going after everybody.
We'll see.
Because, we will see. Because she makes the assertion that Bankman-Fried got a fast, speedy trial, because he kept insisting on it, thinking that he would have a wellspring of support from his adoring public, which was kind of never happened. So, and then now that they got all the emails between him and his dad, mainly his dad, I guess his mom too, who encouraged him to do this and that, if you're in that office and you're doing these cases, I think you could have a lot of fun with this. As long as you don't take the money back from the politicians, they're not going to stop
some
you.
Some of them gave it back. Let's
count all those guys on one hand.
Let's give the money back. Well, they'll be the smart ones if what Mimi is following and finds is true. But this has a term. And the term, and this is all connected, all these people are connected, because it was also Sequoia Capital, Andreessen, all of these guys are all complicit in abusing this man, this young man, into stealing this money. Yeah, don't worry, Sam, you're a genius. Oh, he was playing games during the pitch meeting. He's brilliant. No, he's
an idiot.
Yeah, he's like Bill Gates.
Comb your hair.
He's like Bill Gates with his rocking back and forth. And that is exactly the type of person who is involved in what this techno douche that France 24 is going to explain to us, and he's going to connect it to some other techno douches. This is how we connect Sam Bankman-Fried and AI with the term effective altruism.
Joining me on the set is our technology editor, Peter O'Brien. Hello to you, Peter. What can you tell us about the surprising links between these two events, SBF and the UK's AI summit? What do they have in common?
Yeah, I was wondering how we could link these two together. And actually, there's a simple way to do it. You may not have heard of it, but it's the social movement called effective altruism. It's boffin filled and it's increasingly powerful. Now, that power took a hit when Sam Bankman-Fried, the most high-profile effective altruist and one of the movement's biggest donors, fell from grace. But as we've seen from the AI summit in Bletchley Park this week, we can see that effective altruist talking points are still making their way up the policy agenda. One in particular, the potential for artificial intelligence to cause catastrophic harm, a risk that would not be on the policy table at all were it not for the work of effective altruists. Now, I should add a disclaimer here that I've been briefly involved in the movement in France and donate to some charities that are popular among effective altruists.
Now, he's never going to mention them, but what he's saying is effective altruism, people donate a lot of money for the good of humanity, for the good cause, because we care about the world. That's what Sam Bankman-Fried really should be accused of doing. Thanks to the egging on of his parents, he was literally giving it to his mother for effective altruism, which does a lot of really good things, including this whole AI scam.
Now, how did we get to the point where effective altruism is producing one of the biggest frauds in history? It's also becoming a major policy debate.
So
policy is code for politics.
The only way to really explain this is to take you back through the intellectual history of the movement. So the founding idea of effective altruism is simple. And it's persuasive. In order to do the most good with your time and money, you shouldn't just think about your close circle of friends and family. You shouldn't just think about your community, your country. You should really be taking into consideration all humans in the world, because we all suffer in a similar way.
If Trump's president, we all suffer in a similar way.
A classic example of putting this into practice would be, rather than donating money to your local fire station.
No, don't do that. Don't donate local.
No, don't do that.
No, don't donate local. No. Oh, come on, France douche.
Well, it would be using the same amount to buy much more mosquito nets to protect people from malaria abroad. But rather than just caring about humans, effective altruists quickly realized that the same principle should be applied to anything that can suffer, right? So that could be an animal. That could be a wild animal. That could a human not alive today.
A future human.
But in the future. So that's where we get to this situation where there are lots of effective altruists today who are also long-termists. That means people who are concerned with the welfare of humans and animals that don't yet exist, but could exist in the future.
So this is the idea.
Oh my God! You're getting clip of the day for this.
Thank you.
Piece of shit.
Clip of the day.
So long-termists, and the whole idea is we're concerned about the human of the future who isn't born today. Therefore, we need to support policy that behooves the human of the future, which happens to also kind of be beneficial to our companies.
And that's
exactly what's going on with this AI stuff. Now, I'm going to bring this back to Israel and Hamas with Scott Ritter, controversial guy, but I think he does have an inside track. This one was mind-boggling as he explains that it was really AI that failed Israel with this attack from Hamas.
Let's say that you know you have a mole inside. Now, what happens if I go take that mole, put him outside, blow his head off, and send a photograph to the Israelis? They now know that they don't have a mole. So,
it's better to feed him disinfo.
So what you do is you say, all right, we're assuming there's a mole here. We're going to compartmentalize here. They also know that unit 8200, this is a SIGINT unit that listens to every phone call. What happens if you're talking, you and I are talking, all of a sudden we go, somebody's listening to our phone, and we don't talk anymore on that phone. They're going to say, they know that we're listening to them. So So what Hamas does is they create a communication support plan where they just say, here's the script, guys, just keep talking. And they're talking. And you need A200s going, are we collecting data? We're getting a large stream of data. What are we doing that? We're shooting it into the AI computer that's reading it up. And the computer's coming back going, normal. Meanwhile, Hamas has run landlines under the ground, running using couriers, handwritten pieces of paper, and they're doing all this communication, and Israel's not listening to it. Hamas knows that they're doing the opposite. What's the best way to hide? If I'm doing something secret, I know the enemy's looking for, because it's an AI. It's AI, guys. They're looking for detect change. They're looking for something that's going to trigger an AI report. How do you defeat that? By doing it right in the open. And that's what Hamas did. They built a combat city that is exactly like one of the kibbutzes they were going after. And then they would sit there and run the drills over and over and over again. And the Israelis are going, they looked at it, that's just Hamas training. And that became normal under AI. Mm-hmm. Normal.
Now, whether it was fed into AI or not, the concept of what he's saying is a good one. And I remember seeing videos of paragliders on the West Bank in Gaza, American paragliders, even people are paragliding all over the place, which would kind of play into what he says here.
Paragliding. I was like, how the hell did they get that out? I thought they had to send guys off to vacations around the world to Cancun, Mexico, and practice it. They were doing it right there, right in the open, practicing it. Normal. AI. Now, had they not had the AI, because here's the thing that happened. These girls that we're talking about, these observation girls,
TikTokers, yeah.
They're sitting there and they're looking at it all. They're sitting there going, holy shit, they're training. And they're writing the report. We detect some training. We're a little concerned about this training. And that report goes up the chain, and the chain looks at it and says, what does AI say? Normal. Do this. Girls are looking on, hey, they're running drills. They're bringing the vehicles by close. They're doing a simulated attack. They're bringing, looks like, explosives to the fence, and then going back, and they write it up. What's the computer say? Normal. So the collection was taking place, and at the lowest level, they were doing the job they were supposed to. They were reporting issues of concern up the chain of command. Even the mid-level managers, if they ever got through to them, and they said, okay, I'm going to bump this up to the top, because it did. What people need to understand is the night before the Hamas attack, the head of Israeli intelligence, the general staff, everybody met, because there was somebody in the Israeli intelligence business who said, guys, this is bad. Something's happened. They're getting ready to come over the border. You know, we need to raise the hype. It's Yom Kippur. We need to cancel all leaves. We need to have all the commanders come back here. We need to, you know, get the guards out. We need to get the girls armed. We need to get the girls that don't have weapons out of this. We need to do what we need to do to protect, because they're coming over the border today, guys.
Now, forget the AI part, and that banging is him pretending to hit a keyboard. This rings kind of true, that they were doing this practicing drill over and over and over again, and then when someone...
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with AI.
No, but let's just leave it for what
just
it is.
Just simple analysis, you'd come to the same conclusion.
And here's the final clip.
Somebody wrote that report.
Wait. What is he slamming AI for? I mean, it's like purposeful, and it's meaningless.
Let's see if the third clip gives us any clues.
So they all gathered together, all the senior guys, and they went, what do you guys think? And they said, well, what's the computer telling us? It's all normal. Oh. But this is serious stuff. Yeah.
They didn't listen to Egypt either, apparently.
Shouldn't we raise the alert level? Yeah, but that's Yom Kippur. That would be political. And Netanyahu is already in trouble because, you know, he's trying to rewrite basic law about the judiciary. People are protesting. And now if we screw up their Yom Kippur, there's going to be a problem here. And then they said, the big one was the strategic thinker said, Hamas would never do this. You see, because Hamas has bought into our plan. We're trying to turn them into a governing organization. We had 20,000 work permits that we're using to bribe the Gazans. Their life is getting good. They're making money. Hamas would never throw away what the Israelis have given them out of the kindness of their hearts by attacking us. So the conception is Hamas would never do it. Disregard this information. They said, this is the honest to God's truth, right? They said, we'll meet in the morning to discuss this. So the morning they were supposed to get.
Well, they certainly did.
they certainly did meet and discuss, but it was already happened. It was too late. And this is one of the greatest intelligence failures in the world.
So I think the purposeful AI bullcrap is just because he's a guy that likes human intelligence, military, old school, and is sick of all the AI crap. Maybe. But this story, particularly these last two clips, that rings true. That's the best explanation I've heard so far.
Yeah, and there is some discussion of the number of Palestinians that are working in Israel. There's lots of them.
Mm-hmm.
And
but that's all. That's rarely.
Well, erring on the side of not caution, it seemed to be the blunder here. But
yeah,
you think they have cameras on the wall? I mean, that bulldozer comes over, nobody notices. I mean, the whole thing is still somewhat suspect. They have cameras looking at the wall when the bulldozers came over.
Yeah, I don't know. This seemed like a resource allocation issue. Doesn't really matter anymore. Doesn't really matter. And gone is the whole, the fact that people hate Bibi Netanyahu like they hate Trump. It's the same hysteria. Meanwhile,
yes. Well, there's a woke element in Israel. I hate to use the word, element. But I have to.
Huge. No, it's true. It's the exact same.
And it's major.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to use that term. And
stop using those terms.
I don't know why I can't. I'm helpless. I have a limited vocabulary.
I'm helpless. meanwhile,
let's see what happens.
Meanwhile, CNN. Perhaps also by design, with their new overlords, have finally picked up on what we discussed about the Time magazine article regarding Zelensky, the corruption, the total failure of the spring offensive, which didn't even start in the spring. And they even do a mini cut of the term stalemate. This was surprising.
Oh. After months of a counteroffensive to wrest territory from Russia, new reporting from Time magazine reveals that while Ukrainian President Zelensky is still deeply committed to the fight, some of his advisors are worried. One of Zelensky's aides telling Time he deludes himself. We're out of options. We're not winning. But try telling him that. And that sobering assessment extends beyond the civilian government. Ukraine's commander-in-chief for the armed forces saying this to The Economist. Just like in the First World War, we've reached the level of technology that puts us into a stalemate. There will likely be no deep and beautiful breakthrough. A stalemate which was not the characterization over the last several months.
They've already acknowledged that they're not going as far as fast as they would like. That said, they are moving. It's not a stalemate. They're not just frozen. The Ukrainians are moving.
We do not assess that the conflict is a stalemate. We are seeing it continue to take territory on a methodical, systematic basis.
We've seen good progress on the counteroffensive. It's very heartening. We want to make sure that Ukraine has what it needs, not only to succeed in the counteroffensive, but has what it needs for the long term.
And the reality on the battlefield, well, we can show you. Those silver slivers of yellow are Ukraine's counteroffensive gains, and it really isn't a whole lot. Now, the ground in Ukraine is hardening now for another long winter, and the fight in the United States over how much aid to give it is getting more intense. Congress has authorized roughly $113 billion so far, but polls suggest that the American people's willingness to support Ukraine is waning. The yellow line here shows the share of Americans who say that the U.S. is doing too much to help Ukraine. And now it's at 41%, up from 29% in June. And that's raising some tough questions for the Biden administration and for both parties in Congress.
So right on cue, after we had Volva and the other DJs from Russia hoax Maloney into saying, yeah, you know, everybody in Europe's pretty tired of this. We're all looking for a way out. NBC reporting, U.S. and European officials broach topic of peace negotiations with Ukraine, sources say. The conversations have included very broad outlines of what Ukraine might need to give up to reach a deal with Russia. Now, as they have consistently said, the politicians, and there's a lot of sources say in this article, it's up to Ukraine. It's not for us to say, it's up to Ukraine. So putting our Curry Dvorak consulting hats on, we've got to eliminate Zelensky and put someone else in there who's going to say, this is what we want. And it's got to be a new message. This time.
Yeah, he's got to go.
Then it may not be pretty for him, but he's got to go. Because he wants, you know, he wants Crimea back.
Yeah, that's not happening.
No, it's not happening. So his time just may be up.
Well, it's not being helped by this clip.
Which,
she's back. Queen Ursula's back in Ukraine.
Woo, the queen!
And in a surprise visit to Kyiv, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen met with President Volodymyr Zelensky to discuss Ukraine's path to join the European Union. She praised Zelensky for making excellent progress in pursuing judicial and anti-corruption reforms while fighting its war with Russia. Granting Ukraine EU membership would signal continued international support for the nation.
Oh, man, someone sent her over there. Hey, 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 we got trouble here. We got some trouble. You clearly can't keep it together there. You've got to go as a representative of Europe, which she's not. You got to go over there as a representative of Europe and let everyone know it's everything's good. It's all good. Is she still there?
I don't know how long she was there. This was yesterday.
I love the reports that France 24 has from Ukraine, from Kyiv, where there's people just shopping in the background. They got blue scooters, you know, like,
yeah, there's just like nothing's going on.
Yeah, they rent a scooters. And, you know, like the what is it? What are those scooters called? I forget what they're called. You know,
called a blight.
Yeah. Yes. The scourge. I don't know who operates the blue scooters. And, you know, so it's like, what are we talking about here? End it. But he has to be, someone else has to step up, step in. There has to be some kind of coup. Then there'll be, I'm sure, you know, some Russian friendly government. Everything will calm down. No European Union membership, no NATO membership. But it has to be a shocker, you know, and it's something has to happen where, so Biden and politicians everywhere, look, we got enough. We're working on Iran. Everyone's sick and tired of it. The military industrial complex is already moving on. How do we draw Iran into this thing? We got Israel. This is great. We've replaced $24 billion with $100 billion. Four bagger. We're good to go. Get rid of this. This guy is annoying to us. He's not helping. It's not working. We have to have an event, is what I'm thinking. A big event.
Well, an assassination of Zelensky is always possible.
It would be better.
But that's too. Bigger. Yeah, it's too obvious. You can't do it. It's got to be something. How about a heart attack?
But really?
Well, he's under a lot of pressure.
Yeah. But it would have to be on the world stage, you know, so we can all see it.
Yes. I think that's probably. It has to be at least some part of the stage.
Yeah, the pricker.
It doesn't have to be a big, massive event.
Bring the pricker up.
You know, giving a speech at the UN.
Pricker.
No, it has to be something where he's being filmed, but it's like, so it just goes down, you know, it kind of goes down like Biden does when he's tripping over stuff.
Then we had the leader of Hezbollah. As we've learned how to say it, Hezbollah. And he made his speech, and I have an observation about this.
Crowds gathered across the region to watch the address, highly anticipated by Hezbollah supporters, but also by the international community, hoping for insight on whether the Israel-Hamas war could expand. The militant group's leader, Hassan Nasrallah, first said that neither Tehran nor his Iran-backed group had anything to do with Hamas's attack on Israel, but then went on to say all options were on the table concerning fighting on the Lebanese-Israeli border.
Fear that it could escalate or turn into a full-scale war, or that this front could lead to a wider war, is a realistic possibility.
In southern Lebanon, Hezbollah supporters took Nasrallah's speech as gospel, many saying they would support a war if it came to it.
If things continue to evolve, the situation will be very dangerous. What he said is enough for us. We'll be totally ready.
We tell our adversaries that we want peace, not war. That's what we want. But if there is war, we'll go all the way.
Hezbollah has taken calculated steps to keep the Israeli army preoccupied on the Lebanese border, but not to the extent of igniting an all-out war. Rockets fired on Thursday night hit this town in northern Israel, injuring two people and damaging buildings. The cross-border skirmishes have led to deaths on both sides, civilians as well as fighters and soldiers. A war with the militant group would be devastating for both Israel and Lebanon. Hezbollah is much stronger than Hamas, with an arsenal of some 150,000 rockets and missiles. And during the inconclusive month-long war that Israel fought with the group in 2006, swathes of Lebanon were reduced to rubble.
Ah, the rubbleized strategy. Rubbleization.
Very well, Hansen had a commentary about this, too, in his hour-long lecture.
Yes.
He says that Iran in particular, and Lebanon even more so, and if you listen to other reports where they talk to Lebanese, they said, you know, we don't need this aggravation. We're already damn near a useless country. We haven't got any leadership.
No economy.
We have no government for all practical purposes.
Our money
we don't
is no
need
good.
It.
Yep.
And Hansen said that there's these little skirmishes, especially the ones that were out in the middle of nowhere in Syria and to our bases, like the base we have in Syria for some unknown reason. And the base, I guess there's a base in Iraq or two, and they're shooting stuff at him. And his thought was that this is just to make the Arabs happy that they're doing something. Oh, no, we didn't do nothing.
Here was the observation from one of our producers. This was a video telecast, whether it was pre-recorded or live is unclear. And if you look at the setting, once our producer, I forget who said this to me, but once our producer said this, I'm like, oh, wow. I went, oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Far out. Groovy.
Groovy, baby. He was sitting on a Herman Miller chair. What kind of leader sits in a nondescript room on a Herman Miller chair, which, by the way, our U.S. government uses?
A lot of people use.
Yeah, but these guys, they like thrones. They like gilded rooms. I thought that was interesting. An interesting observation.
It is kind of interesting. I don't know if it's
It may mean nothing. It may mean nothing. But you don't know. So we want to draw Iran in on that side. Now, let's just suppose that Zelensky has an event, died suddenly. And we still need to engage Russia. How can we draw Russia into this somehow? Can we bring Russia into
this? I don't
think
we want to. Would you think we want to? Why would we want to? We don't need that aggravation.
Let's see what the U.S. intel suggests.
I'm struck by the convergence of so many complicating factors. And another one happened yesterday. You're reporting suggesting Syria has agreed to send a Russian missile system to Hezbollah. What do we know here?
Yeah, this is a potentially extremely complicating factor here. So Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, we are told, has agreed to provide Hezbollah, the Lebanese militant organization, with a Russian air defense system. And it is apparently going to be delivered by the Wagner Group, which is that Russian mercenary organization. Yeah. Now, these are all connected because they all really operate inside Syria. So Hezbollah is backed by Iran. Iran supports Assad. Russia also supports Assad. And all of this is coming together, of course, hours at a very, very delicate moment when there are serious concerns across the U.S. government that Hezbollah could join the conflict on that northern border with Israel. So having a missile defense system that is being delivered by Wagner, potentially, we don't know yet if it has been delivered or the status of that, that could really, intensify this conflict in a way that the administration has been urging the Iranians and Hezbollah and other Iranian proxy groups not to do. So it is definitely a concern, but it just shows just how many actors there are who could potentially join this conflict and make it even worse.
I call that a trial balloon. Someone's trying a little strategy out, see if it catches. That's a weird one. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Hey, look, Russia's in on this.
Yeah, it could be bull crap.
Well, it probably is, but that's not the point. The point is, what can the military-industrial complex do once we shut down the Ukraine situation?
Well, maybe they don't. Nobody likes the idea of us trying to set Iran up so we can go in there now before it gets too late.
Possible. Yeah, possible.
I mean, that might not be a bad thing.
No, it's all possible. Yeah. It's amazing. The world is an amazing place.
Well, I have a couple more clips on, which are about tunnel warfare, which is kind of part of this battle that's going on.
PBS?
Tunnel warfare, yeah, PBS.
Here's the bottom.
Actually, I believe this is NPR. I just put PBS by accident.
No, what you're really saying is...
Elitist Voices of America. This is NPR. Or PBS.
Here's the bottom line when it comes to fighting an enemy hiding in a labyrinth of tunnels. You don't want to send your troops there.
It's very dark and it's claustrophobic and it's narrow and you lose your sense of direction.
It's scary in the tunnel.
Immediately, you lose what complete sense of time.
What? What?
That's exactly what she's saying. Her whole, as the expert, that's all she basically says.
It's scary.
You summarized the two clips right there.
I'm sorry. Let's listen.
Scary in the tunnel.
It's scary in the tunnels.
Your sense of direction, immediately, you lose complete sense of time.
Daphna Rishmon Barak is an Israeli military analyst and the author of Underground Warfare. The Israeli military has taken her into Hamas tunnels that crossed from Gaza into southern Israel.
They are humid and suffocating, and they are incredibly scary. So when you walk in them, you'll be disoriented for sure, but also incredibly afraid.
Hamas says it has 300 miles of tunnels, a subterranean complex that, according to Israel, includes military headquarters, sleeping quarters, as well as workshops to make and store rockets.
It's like Santa's workshop.
Underground passageways crisscross Gaza. They're designed to allow Hamas fighters...
Can you stop it for a second? It reminds me of something.
Yeah.
If you recall the beginning of the Afghan war, I wish I still had some of these documents because they were printed into all the news magazines had them. They made the claim that the Afghanis had this huge underground complex.
Yeah, smoke them out.
But it was more than that because they showed images. There were like giant garages where they worked on trucks. There was all this different stuff. It was like, factories underground. This is what she's describing, or somebody's describing, where they're having barracks and all this other shit all underground. I'm doubting this.
Well, all I ever see is videos of the opening, like,
they're all
opening,
narrow,
very narrow opening, and then I've never seen a workshop or the sleeping quarters. I've seen
no. This is reminds somebody is. Who's ever writing these scripts used to write for Hogan's Heroes.
A subterranean complex that, according to Israel, includes military headquarters, sleeping quarters, as well as workshops to make and store rockets. Underground passageways crisscross Gaza. They're designed to allow Hamas fighters to quickly surface and strike Israeli troops without warning.
Pop up.
Hamas has been shoveling for a long time. Chuck Freilich remembers the tunnels were part of the Israeli discussions when he was deputy national security advisor in the early 2000s. He sees the expansion of the tunnels as part of Israel's broader intelligence failure in underestimating Hamas.
And you don't believe that the enemy can do X, and so you don't see it. And then in retrospect, it always turns out that there's lots of information in the system, but people, smart people, ignored it.
Meanwhile, the true enemy of the American people, the U.S. government, have actual tunnels and workshops and maglev trains in Colorado connecting all kinds of huge hangars with all kinds of stuff. That's the truth.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're projecting.
Yeah, with McDonald's in there. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. himself said
well,
that.
Well, you know, the North America has, this is not an unusual situation. Underneath the town of Toronto is a labyrinth of tunnels where they have stores, department stores. The same thing with Montreal. There's a lot of tunnels. And in the wintertime, the whole, everything that's above ground goes underground. And Edmonton, Alberta even has an underground tunnel system. I've been in the Toronto system. I've been in the Edmonton system. And you could be in there for days.
Well, that's interesting.
And there's actually a McDonald's, not you mention it, in the Toronto system, and it leads to one of the hotels. To get to this adjacent set of tunnels, you have to go to the McDonald's, and then you have to go to a door that's by the bathrooms and open that door, and there's another set of tunnels.
And to get out, you have to exit through the gift shop. Please buy some merch
it's
on your way out of our
fascinating.
Tunnels. I'll bet it is.
With Israeli ground troops now deep inside Gaza, the tunnels are becoming a key factor in the fighting. The Israeli military recently said its ground forces were near Gaza's northern border when they spotted Hamas fighters emerging from a tunnel. The Israeli troops fired on them, killing or wounding the Hamas members, the military said, without elaborating. Israel faces another big challenge because Hamas is believed to be holding more than 200 hostages underground. Again, Chuck Freilich.
I think there's all sorts of fancy technology being used to try and map them out, but we may not know everything. And there's somebody and some booby trap awaiting you at every turn. And of course, the hostages are probably down there somewhere.
In a recent military briefing, Israel said Hamas has constructed military headquarters directly beneath Gaza's largest hospital, Al-Shifa. Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari is Israel's military spokesman.
Hamas terrorists operate inside and under Shifa Hospital and other hospitals in Gaza with network of terror tunnels.
Hamas vehemently denies this.
It
says Israel makes these accusations to excuse a relentless bombing campaign that's already killed thousands of Palestinian civilians. And human rights groups say the existence of Hamas tunnels does not justify Israeli airstrikes when large numbers of civilians are present. Hagari argues that it is Hamas that's cynically putting civilians at risk.
Oh, God! Oh.
Is that clip two?
That was clip two, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Meanwhile, the city of Chicago is heating up, but not literally because it's 24 degrees and snowing. It's not great if you're a migrant sleeping on the street, asylum seeker sleeping on the street, awaiting something from the Chicago government or the Illinois government. And the residents of Chicago are very perturbed, to say the least, perturbed about the tents being set up and them not being asked if this could all just take place. And so a special session was called by several aldermen. It's the way it works in Chicago. You have these wards. And then, Chicago is a fantastic place the way that's run. And the residents who are the most pissed off are the African-American, i.e. Black Americans, who are like, whoa, hold on a second. You didn't ask us. What's going on here? This is getting out of control.
To adjourn or not to adjourn, the lights went out while some city council members claim the meeting wasn't officially over. It was the end to a chaotic special meeting that centered around the migrant crisis.
Chicago has yet to say, we can't take anymore. We have to draw the line somewhere.
And that's what's been kind of frustrating about this quote-unquote debate, is that people who are attacking the Sanctuary City Ordinance don't know what they're talking about. It has nothing to do with refugee resettlement. It has nothing to do with the current crisis.
Alderman Anthony Beal, Ray Lopez, and others called the special meeting to discuss and vote on a non-binding referendum that would let voters decide if Chicago should remain as a sanctuary city.
All I'm asking is that we give the people of this great city of Chicago a chance to have a voice on this issue.
Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa says the Sanctuary City Ordinance only refers to law enforcement and government officials not cooperating with ICE. Mayor Brandon Johnson, City Council floor leader, says providing resources to migrants is about the city's values. It's not written in the ordinance. Ramirez Rosa claimed the meeting violated state law. He tried to stop it by sending out a group text telling alders not to show up so there wouldn't be enough for a quorum.
Well, I'm leaving because right now I have potholes, trees to get trimmed, and I have a host of other things that our residents in the Sixth Ward want me to deal with.
Alderman William Hall and many of the mayor's strongest supporters did not show. However, after two tries, there was a quorum and the meeting started. But it never came to a vote because of confusion and debate over the rules. Ramirez Rosa claiming one thing and Beal and Lopez claiming another.
And they were so worried about losing and putting this question before the voters that they were willing to bend every rule in the book to get out of here as quickly as possible.
And how the meeting legally ended is up for debate as well. Ramirez Rosa says it was adjourned and the Sanctuary City issue will not be taken up. But Beal and Lopez say the meeting was in recess and it will continue on Tuesday morning.
Didn't really want to hear what the citizens of Chicago felt about it. No. That would be annoying to learn.
Yes, this is a huge mess for these towns.
Cities.
And Chicago
cities.
Is no exception. Now there'd be dead people in the streets.
But no chance for that. No bus rides. Hey, you're in Chicago. Yeah, let me go to D.C.
Yes.
Chant about something else. We're moving into the winter, even here in Texas, getting pretty cold. How is your weather warm? You have season. You have global warming there, don't you?
Yeah, we have convenient global warming after the coldest summer in the history of the state.
Yeah.
Now it's like 70. I think it's 70 today. It's kind of, we have a storm coming in, so we may get some rain, maybe like, you know, a tenth of an inch.
Yeah, it's been pretty cold here. We've dipped below freezing a couple of times during the night. But anyway, it's flu season, and it would appear that people's immunity has been weakened. I can't imagine what it was that weakened their immunity, but it has happened, and there's a few clips we need to discuss here.
New figures out this morning show the infant mortality rate in the U.S. rose last year for the first time in decades. Doctors say one factor is so-called maternity care deserts, where there's a lack of services for pregnant women. They say another factor is the new limits on access to abortion, resulting in the continuation of more pregnancies.
Can you believe that?
Well, that's an ironic way of doing it.
Because you can't abort your child. They're dying. What is going on? Well, Dr. Drew.
Did they mention the vaccination, unnecessary vaccinations?
No, this is where the Dr. Drew clip comes in.
Oh.
Dr. Drew, who has changed his tune because he was very pro-vax in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. He was a maniac.
And once he started to see the data, and I think that you and I both agree, he's a data-driven guy, and he's pretty level-headed.
Wasn't looking.
No, but once he got the data, he started turning around and saying, well, you know, this is not right. There's some stuff that's wrong here. And he's also very skeptical of certainly the efficacy, but of the perhaps danger of the COVID vaccination. And the damage may be done. So in the UK, and this is Ed Dowd. He's the former BlackRock fund manager. He wrote a book about, and he's on the insurance company side. So he saw the data the insurance companies have seen, and they're going, whoa, no, we got excess deaths. We got some problem with especially children. There's a problem that more children are dying. He's focusing on the United Kingdom. So he has this discussion with Dr. Drew, and here is Ed Dowd about excess mortality in the UK amongst children.
You, I understand, have some new data for us as well. What's going on your data front here?
Yeah, so we're starting to update 2023 numbers with as of June. We started off in the UK. We're going to be following up with other countries, but just so we're clear, the 2023 numbers I talk about are annualized estimates based off a linear model, given the data we have as of June. And one thing we discovered that was quite worrisome was something I actually talked about in my book as a smoking gun. Children in the UK were not vaccinated till later in 2021, and their excess deaths were actually going down because of lockdowns and school closures, which makes sense because the biggest cause of death in 1 through 14 age group is accidental. Well, we saw then that their excess deaths were starting to rise with the introduction of the vaccines. Now the 23 numbers are coming in, and it's gone from the numbers are, let me just look, 16% in 2022 and 22% in 2023. And in 2021, it was actually minus 7% excess deaths. So, you know, obviously I'm of the camp, it's the vaccine. So we're seeing a rise in excess deaths in the age group 1 through 14 post the implementation of the vaccine. We haven't put this out yet, but we run some correlations. Again, correlations aren't causation, but it's a 0.94 fit on the model. Ah. So 94% correlation to the vaccine rollout.
In terms of that 0.93 correlation.
What?
Coincidence.
Oh, no.
Correlation is not causation, but we have 94%.
Well, he'll address the elephant in the room in a moment.
On the model, so 94% correlation to the vaccine rollout.
In terms of that 0.93 correlation, I'd love to know, A, how you arrived at that, and B, I'm seeing lots more data coming in that is suggesting COVID may be the culprit for the excess deaths. What do you do with that data?
If COVID was the cause of this rise in ages 1 through 14, why didn't it appear in 2020 and 2021 and only started post-vaccination? So these questions need to be asked. They need to be investigated. But the numbers that I reported in my book have gotten worse since my book, unfortunately.
So correlation, not causation, but looks pretty grim. Looks pretty grim. In the UK. But I'm sure that's just because, you know, there's no access to abortion. So kids are dying somehow. I'm not sure that works.
That's it. And global warming.
And then here's just a random doctor, Dr. William Mackus, who is just reporting on what the good doctor is seeing.
There are only a handful out of the 100,000 doctors, Canadian doctors, that didn't take the vaccine that are still practicing medicine. So it's something like 99.9% vaccination rate. And they were the first ones to line up for their vaccines. Well, as I started looking at the sudden deaths of Canadian doctors, I realized, yes, most of them are dying from cardiac issues, heart injuries, cardiac arrests, dying while jogging or swimming, dying in their sleep. And Dr. Peter McCullough has talked about this extensively, about the myocarditis and the damage to the heart, the scarring to the heart. And then some were dying from blood clots, pulmonary emboli, strokes. But then there was quite a large subset of doctors who were developing extremely aggressive cancers. And cancers at an age that they shouldn't be getting. So, for example, there was a doctor who developed gastric cancer in his 30s. Presented at stage 4, he was dead in less than a year. Very rare brain cancers in young individuals in their 20s and 30s, medical students, medical residents. And these cancers would always present at stage 4, and they would always kill them in a matter of a few months, and it was always less than a year. And, you know, at first I didn't know, you know, what the term for this was or what the phenomenon was. I just started, you know, really paying attention to it, tracking it. I then, you know, realized that this is being called turbo cancer by people on social media. A turbo cancer is not a medical term, but it's a term that people came up with to really describe the extremely aggressive nature of these cancers in the COVID vaccinated. And these cancers behave completely differently, unlike anything I've seen before in my career. And I've diagnosed over 20,000 cancer patients in my career with cutting edge PET CT, positron emission tomography, imaging, CT, MRI, pathological correlation. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen stage 4 breast cancers presenting in women in their 20s. I've never seen stage 4 colon cancers presenting in men and women in their, you know, 20s, 30s. Leukemias that will kill you in a matter of days or even hours after diagnosis. Lymphomas that, again, kill you in a matter of months.
Happy days are here again. This is bad. These cancers.
Well, once this is not something that's ending anytime soon.
No.
And so I fear for the future of Pfizer.
Oh, Pfizer is done. They're done. And
this is a John's Mansfield. I said it before on the show.
John's Mansfield.
This is a situation where it could take the company out of the picture completely.
Borla, the CEO, was on CNBC with Jim Cramer, Mad Money. Because what is, isn't their stock down like some, like 30 or 40%? Haven't they just tanked?
It hasn't tanked per se, but it's way down.
Do you want to hear these clips from him?
Yeah, I love listening to Cramer.
Okay. So, because whatever Cramer says, do the opposite and you'll be golden. If Cramer says buy, you should sell. So here he is with Albert Bulla. I'm talking about, you know, the troubles that Pfizer is having with, you know, with their latest vaccine. I mean, what's going on here, Albert?
But there is some sort of vaccine fatigue in this country right now that I think is affecting your earnings.
You think?
You're right, but it's mainly in the COVID area because our RSV has done tremendously better than what we thought.
RSV, we know that that's a lie because our... insurance companies won't pay for it, and it's $1,000 a shot. So he's lying about these numbers.
Our pneumococcal vaccine is doing tremendously better than what we thought and the analysts thought. And of course, the flu vaccinations are doing trending quite well. We don't have trending. A flu, but we know how they are trending.
I love it. And you know, the flu vaccinations are trending quite well. We don't have a flu, but the vaccinations are trending quite well. We told them, release the flu. And they didn't do it.
And of course, the flu vaccinations are doing trending quite well. We don't have a flu, but we know how they are trending. So there is a little bit of COVID.
So why say it?
Yeah, it gets better.
Which reflects on the number of COVID vaccinations that we had. Also, don't forget, Jim, the COVID vaccines came a little bit late.
We had a pipeline problem. They came too late.
In the season, right? In the middle of September, approximately. We had all August quite a wave of COVID. So a lot of people got COVID. And they can't do a vaccine before 4 months after they had COVID.
So we missed it. We missed it. Damn it.
They missed the node in the cycle?
Yeah, we missed it. We missed it by months. It was in August. We should have had the vax then. We missed it. We missed it. Well, let's keep going here. Come on, Jim asked something interesting.
But is it working? I mean, I know that when I go, I feel like right now I went and I got my flu and I got my Pfizer COVID.
Oh, Jim Cramer's a dead man.
And I felt wrapped.
By the way, he didn't say he got the shots. He just got his flu and his COVID. I went in to get some flu and COVID.
Like right now, I went and I got my flu and I got my Pfizer COVID.
Yeah, exactly. Your Pfizer COVID, yes.
And I felt rather pioneerish. I felt that I'm alone. Now, I know others are doing it, but I'm struggling with the idea. Why doesn't everybody do this? And what is the resistance?
Because, I don't get it.
Why doesn't everybody do what I do? I'm Jim Cramer.
We thought in the beginning of the years, we thought that we would have 24% of the Americans, and that was our projection, we're doing a COVID vaccine this year. So far, it looks like it's trending more towards 17%. And so far, maybe 7-8% have done it. But the months ahead of us are very strong. So there are many reasons why it's lower. We are far away from the COVID fear, so everybody will get the vaccine. Now we are in the middle of the COVID fatigue.
Oh, we're in the middle of the COVID fatigue. We need to have more fear. More fear.
Nobody wants to speak about COVID. And we have also a lot of anti-vaxxers rhetoric at the peak.
Oh, but there you go. We're responsible for the stock price drop, the anti-vaxxers.
But the good news is that...
The anti-vaxxers rhetoric, the way he said it.
Yes,
the rhetoric.
Nobody wants to speak about COVID. And we have also a lot of anti-vaxxers rhetoric at the peak. But the good news is that those that are doing a vaccine right now are those that they truly believe in the value of vaccination. So that's a very base assumption for what the vaccination rates could be as a floor going forward.
Well, okay, then maybe you need to do some more marketing. How's the marketing?
There's something that occurred that is fortuitous, and I'm not trying to make light of it, but you picked the spokesperson, Travis Kelce, perhaps because of his association with Taylor Swift, maybe the most famous athlete in the world right now. And he also has an antagonist, a fellow by the name of Aaron Rodgers, who called him Mr. Pfizer in order to mock him. But the fact is, sir, isn't that the kind of awareness that you need in order to be able to build prescriptions, build vaccines, and then get people to realize the power of your portfolio?
I think there is.
prescriptions, build vaccines, and then get people to realize the power of your portfolio.
I think he is, and he's a wonderful spokesperson for us, and we are very proud that we are associating our name with him.
Oh, yeah. Well, the marketing is up. No, because Ozempic is outspending you. Novo Nordisk has spent $600 million in the American market alone. That was not within the first 9 months. They are out marketing you on all fronts. No one wants to talk about your crap on the morning shows. We want to talk about losing weight with a shortcut. But anyway, grade your transition.
Dr. Borla, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hello, hello. How are you, Jim?
I am fine. How are you, sir?
Very, very well.
That was, I actually played them out of order. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Oh, yes. He was doing the rounds. He was on Reuters about the, no, that's an old one.
Yeah, he's trying to probably,
yeah, yeah, screw that guy. Screw him. I say. So we had the dinner with the ER doctor and his wife.
Oh, okay.
And
how did that go? What did you learn?
Here's what I'm learning, bro. Fenbendazole, I think it is. Fenbendazole.
Yeah, that's the stuff everyone's talking about, the anti-cancer drug.
Yeah, it sounds like it's the real deal.
Yeah.
Of course, it's generic. It's used to deworm dogs. So.
No, another worm thing. Those dewormers have got to be good for you.
But that's what everyone's talking about. And it seems like there's something there. Yeah. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it seems like there's something there. So more bad news for the pharmaceutical industry.
No.
No, as long as we have the...
As long as they can advertise on TV, there's no bad news for them. They've got to be banned from advertising. Some of the stuff they're advertising is just like... Sounds like a death pill when you listen to the whole ad.
Pretty much all of it sounds like a death pill. The new Alzheimer's drugs right off the bat, you know, may result in death. Hey, yeah. Hey, granny. It's a win-win either way. Either you remember stuff and you clear up, or you're dead and you're out of our lives. All right, before we take a break, this was, for conspiracy therapists like myself, this was a concerning message that came out on Friday, and this is a report, part of it Friday, part of it Saturday.
Thousands of people are still waiting for their money tonight. U.S. Bank, Wells Fargo, Huntington Bank, everyone shared the same message about a deposit delay. Danny Spiewak explains what happened and when you'll see your money.
From Minneapolis-based U.S. Bank to Wells Fargo to Bank of America, some of the nation's largest banks experienced disruptions Friday with direct deposit. The Federal Reserve says it's because of a processing error with the centralized system known as the Automated Clearinghouse.
It wasn't at one of the banks. It was actually in the plumbing that feeds those deposits into the banks.
Greg McBride is the chief financial analyst for Bankrate.com.
It's unsettling going into the weekend to not see the deposit there that you had expected to see when you got up this morning.
The clearinghouse says this impacted less than 1% of daily transactions, but that's still thousands of users. Across the country, people flooded social media with complaints, asking if others were having problems with direct deposit too. One person wrote, "Direct deposit being messed up when rent is due is crazy."
But your money is safe, and the banks are working to get that corrected with the provider.
For example, U.S. Bank said in a statement that customer accounts remain secure and balances will be updated when deposits are received.
The money will be there. What you want to do is make sure that any payments that were scheduled to come out today, that those creditors are notified, that you're not assessed any late fees, and that if there were any overdraft fees that you incurred, that the bank reverses those.
There is no timetable right now for when all these direct deposit issues are going to be fixed.
Well, clearly it's the fault of ivermectin. But when I hear reports...
AI.
No. When I hear reports of people talking about, oh, it's something in the tubes, I'm like, really? You know, the way ACH works, I know because I had Bankers Trust, another fine institution, had Bankers Trust as a client in the mid to late 90s. And it's really these huge machines, but they're all mainframes, and they have to do settlement, and they do a lot of it in the overnight hours. And it's, okay, I have to send this much to you. You got to send this much to me, so we don't actually send anything back and forth. We just do an accounting. What bothers me about this report is everyone saying, your account is secure. Why? Was this maybe some kind of... Maybe ransomware? Can you imagine ransomware or something of that magnitude getting into the ACH system?
It's, that it would be unbelievably interesting.
But while they're saying your accounts are secure.
Yeah, I think you may have picked up on something there. Something may have happened at that level.
Now, the only other thing I can think is that the Citizens Bank of Iowa basically collapsed on Friday. Not a lot of news about it. So maybe because they had stuff going back and forth that they had to, you know, stop the tubes. But it is kind of a tubish system. It's really old fashioned. It's not, it's no magic. It's not like, you know, like crypto. There's not money going on a blockchain. It's just these big machines that have to talk to each other overnight. It's the clearing house. So you never want that to happen on a weekend. It's not a holiday weekend. Is it? Is it a holiday weekend? No.
We have a holiday coming up.
No, but no, that doesn't count. It would have to be on a, you know, bank holiday weekend, as they say. But I think that's not like it. So it's just troublesome. ACH, I mean, that's, everything goes through ACH, doesn't it? Checks, everything goes that way.
You had the banker over, you should have asked him.
I didn't know. I had the ER doctor. I didn't have the banker over, the ER doctor.
Oh, we should have asked him.
No, if you ask the bank, is there, that's the kind of answer you get from him. You get like, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay. maybe it's time to bring in Fed now.
Yeah, that's the time. That's the thing to do.
Could be something like that.
I don't have anything that even comes close to that clip. Bezos moved to Miami. I got that. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a Trump fraud case update. It's got a little banking stuff in okay. there. This is about banks.
Eric Trump concludes his testimony. He said he wouldn't sign anything that wasn't accurate. The judge has ruled that he and others fraudulently inflated the value of his father's assets. Our legal correspondent, Arlene Richards, finds out.
I'm sorry. Before we. Why didn't they use the old glitch? That's what I'm missing from that report.
Oh, this is bugging. It's eating at you.
Yes, because normally
that's what they do. They say there was a glitch.
A glitch in the system, nothing to worry about.
But instead, they're waving their arms going, no, dear, you're secure. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. And then you imagine the building on fire behind the guy.
This is fine. Yes, okay. Back to Trump.
Eric Trump concludes his testimony. He said he wouldn't sign anything that wasn't accurate. The judge has ruled that he and others fraudulently inflated the value of his father's assets. Our legal correspondent, Arlene Richards, finds out why he signed documents that the judge believes are fraudulent.
Eric Trump is finished testifying. But he didn't leave the stand until after the state confronted him with evidence that he signed off on estimates of some of his father's properties. The state is trying to establish that Donald Trump's second son was involved in a scheme to inflate the value of his father's assets. The younger Trump said he relied on his accountants and attorneys to ensure those estimates were accurate. Judge Arthur Engoron has already ruled that the senior Trump and his two sons fraudulently inflated those assets to win favorable terms from lenders and insurers. Outside of the courtroom, Eric blasted Attorney General Letitia James. He told reporters later that James should be an advocate for businesses like Trump's.
She should be an advocate for businesses that pay a lot of taxes and do great things and meet their commitments and pay off their debts.
He said she should not advocate for Deutsche Bank.
She should also go out and fight for the little guys as opposed to trying to be an advocate of Deutsche Bank, who literally loves us, who said we have done absolutely nothing wrong.
He said Deutsche Bank made hundreds of millions of dollars from doing business with Trump, something the judge has not disputed. But the focus of this trial is on how much more money the bank could have made if not for the fraud. Eric said the truth will come out.
We haven't done a single thing wrong. They're trying to disqualify my father for 2024. He's leading in all the polls.
His father posted two words on social media. Election interference.
You know, the former New York banker worked at Deutsche Bank. And years ago, we talked about, because they did business with Trump. Then we talked about it. He said, yeah, Trump is a douche, but we always made good money off of him. I think that's a direct quote.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly right.
And isn't this just a matter of market pricing, best price?
Yeah, there's the judges using like the price that you get from the county and the value of your property. They did that with Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, so he's going to say that. All right. Okay. Well, Mar-a-Lago, he said, was, you know, like $8 million or something.
Yeah, something ridiculous.
Which is what Trump might have bought it for. That's very possible.
I don't know. Whatever he bought it for is beside the point. The thing is a valuable property, especially where it's located.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, with the devaluation,
it might be worth a billion. It might be worth a billion. But you can't sell it for $8 million. I guarantee it'll sell quick.
Yeah, there was a whole report.
No, this is just obvious. This is transparently election interference. There's no question. No, and all that, these other cases, I think the public is wise to it. And these things are starting to fall apart.
Hmm. Well, it's a little quiet on the political front. There's not a lot of.
Yeah, it's because Kennedy's taking himself out of the picture, at least for now.
Yeah, they tried to get him with the. Did you see that? They tried to get him with the Lolita Express that he flew.
Kennedy?
On. Oh yeah, he. Robert F. Kennedy. Yes, but here it is, and this is actually kind of interesting. When I read the statement, amid mounting curiosity over Kennedy being listed as one of the passengers on Epstein's jet, a spokesperson for the former Democrat exclusively told Newsweek.
Wait, stop. Where are you reading this from?
I'm reading Newsweek,
and it uses the term former Democrat.
Yes.
That's pretty revealing.
Exclusively told Newsweek that he had, quote, flown one time on Jeffrey Epstein's private plane. It was in 1993 from New York City to Palm Beach to visit RFK Jr.'s mom for Easter. The spokesperson added that the private jet trip was made possible by Kennedy's then wife, Mary Richard Kennedy, who was friendly with Epstein's partner at the time, Ghislaine Maxwell. Now, of course, Mary Kennedy, not mentioned in this report, committed suicide years after they were divorced. But they say Richardson Kennedy passed away in 2012. That's interesting, too. Instead of, you know, she committed suicide. Kennedy has been married to Curb Your Enthusiasm star Cheryl Hines since 2014. Quote, Mary, Kennedy's wife, and two of their kids were on the flight, the representative said. Mary knew Epstein's girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell, who learned that they were going to Palm Beach for Easter and offered their family a ride. I never get cool offers like that. While there has been no evidence to suggest that Epstein's listed plane passengers were involved in any of his crimes, a number of social media users have falsely pushed the suggestion that all those who knew him were in some way complicit. Well, then they should also talk about Kamala Harris, who was parting it up with Ghislaine Maxwell. So, but clearly.
A lot of these stories, you know, the Kennedy op, it relies on stories like this that can be debunked.
Debunkables.
So there's a lot of debunkable stuff. It comes out and it goes, oh, that's a bad guy. Oh, it's debunked. Oh, he's a good guy.
The debunkables.
All he was doing is getting a ride.
I think we need a t-shirt. The debunkables. Dum, 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 dum.
So Kennedy, all this stuff is, you know, is very, oh, he said this about that. No, he never did. Oh, he didn't. Okay, well, he's okay.
Crap.
So there's a lot of this debunkables around Kennedy. It's like phase three.
Yeah, well, he better step it up. Yeah, maybe just chill out. Maybe chill out until after Zelensky's dead or something. I'm pre-bunking.
you have to assume if it's up.
Debunkables now in six
if
packs.
If it calms down, there's a reason.
And with that, I'd like to thank you for your courtesy in the morning to you, the man who put the sea in the scary tunnels. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C. DeVore.
Well, in the morning to you, Mr. Ancrin. In the morning, all ships at sea and the boots on the ground, the feet in the air and the subs in the water and the dames and the knights out there.
And in the morning to the future graduates of the No Agenda PhD and to our trolls in the troll room. Hands up, trolls.
Troll down.
Okay, we have 2058 right now.
Wow. people bailed out. We must have been boring.
We had 2269 about half an hour ago.
Yeah.
So where do we?
Well, the average on Sunday should be 2400.
So we lost it with the, I guess, with the COVID. When people heard they could die, they're like, I'm checking out.
Yeah, actually, it's not uplifting.
It's not uplifting. I hate
that. Half of them, I would say most of our audience has gotten a shot. So what are you going to do? I mean, all you're doing is presenting them with their doom. This is not good.
I'll never do it again.
Now, there is some, there is this. Supposedly, there's a couple of, there's some NATO, something that's derived from natto, that fermented beans that the Japanese eat, and a couple of pills. There's some different kinds of supplements you can take
to clear yourself up. Yes.
Of the...
I will ask the ER doctor. I think he has a protocol.
Yeah, there's got to be protocols, and then that will help. Then people will listen, because instead of telling them they're all going to die, you're just being like the mainstream media.
I'm horrible.
You are horrible. I'm sorry. Instead of telling them that, you'd be telling them, hey, look at this, look at that. We have some links.
Yes. Bless you. Not medical advice. Not medical advice, but just bless you. Hey, do you have COVID?
No, I got to sneeze.
Thank you, trolls. We love having you here. So, trolls have been good this morning. For some reason, they've just been good. I don't know. They're not as trolly as usual. Troll more, trolls. Man, you can become a troll. It's very simple. Just look for a bridge, go live under it. You're good to go. Or you can go to trollroom.io and become a virtual troll. And we do that. We have noagendastream.com, which is 24 hours a day with all of the best podcasts from around Gitmo Nation. It truly is the best podcast network, a true sense of the word, because you sit there in the troll room and you listen to, and a lot of these shows are live, and you just troll. Like, you know what you're talking about. And it feels good. And it's ephemeral. You know,
that's the voice too, you have to have.
That's exactly what it is. We're like, you know what you're
talking about. And the ventriloquist comes out.
He's back. Yeah, but it's ephemeral because it goes away. You know, that's what's cool about it. It's not like No Agenda Social, where we have lots of trolls congregating. And that's just like any other social network, algo or not, people spinning each other up. And then, you know, what happens is then they resort to DM. Hey, man, you should calm down. Yeah, it's easy does it, man. Don't worry about it.
What? Who's doing that? To who?
Well, people get mad at each other. And then other people will DM those people and say, hey, you know, calm down. It's not that big a deal. You know, so they're trying to console them, you know, talk them off the ledge. But it's
I've never seen that.
No, because you don't see the DMs, because they're DMs. They're private, direct messages. You can't see them.
Okay.
I think the problem with this is when you have someone who posts something and then all the replies have equal weight, so they're the same size, you know, it looks like an original post itself. Well,
you want to be like Dig, where you get up and down voted and then type font changes and
no, I'm just thinking, no, just you can't comment. You can only post, no comments. You can post. You can't respond to anybody.
Oh,
that would make more sense. Yeah, you like it? I see you yelling at people all the time.
I'm not yelling at anybody.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, you have to find. Okay. I want to see an example. Next time you see one, I want you to put it aside and then bring it up on the show and then condemn me.
Well, it's very easy. I'll do it right now. I'll go John C. Dvorak.
No, you won't find anything.
Yeah, you will. That's the John C. Dvorak. I'm going to go to posts and replies. Okay. And here we go. Let me just scroll down a little bit. How does being provocative cross any line? There you go. There's one right there. That's you. That's you yelling.
It wasn't in caps.
Oh, it has to be in caps. Okay. All right. I just
be yelling.
I just hear your voice. When I know your voice.
Hello.
free donuts. See, there it is. They're yelling again at people about donuts.
Free donuts, yeah.
yes. All of the trolls regardless.
Oh, by the way.
Yes.
So one of our policemen sends me some Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh, I didn't get any
to the mailbox.
Oh, how'd they arrive?
They arrive like they would have. It doesn't matter if they're 10 minutes unfresh or it could be a month. It's all the same.
Yeah.
And then he demanded a de-douching for some unknown reason. And no. Thanks for the donuts.
Because
but
he sent you donuts?
Yeah.
Well, is that not treasure? Is that not treasure?
I guess. He says they're delicious.
So you should post it on No Agenda Social. Angrily.
Post what? The donut?
Angrily that you're not giving him a de-douching.
Oh, no. I just said it.
Yeah. Okay.
He knows. Yeah. He listens. He knows what he's doing.
So did you send my portion of the donuts to me?
Yours are the ones that went bad.
Of course. Yes. Yeah, the old wine cask. This is a value for value show, and we've been doing that for 16 years, and I personally love it. This is the longest job I've ever had. It is not what I'm paid for, what I'm made for. I enjoy it so much, and that's because we have time, talent, and treasure sent back to us. So the deal is, here's the show. Twice a week, 3 hours minimum, sometimes longer. You enjoy it as long as you want for whatever you want to do. Do whatever you want. And if you think that it's valuable enough to keep it going, then you send something back to us. Now, a lot of people like to send us talent and treasure, which is very highly appreciated, because many of these things we could never do. We could never have artists that supply us with nonstop artwork to choose from for every single episode. That would bankrupt us right there. Just that one gesture alone. No Agenda Social. Are you kidding me? I had to give that. That's a full-time job. That's what Aaroner does. And he needs, you know, he has to take all kinds of SSRIs and everything and Xanax to stay calm. So, no, we couldn't have done any of that. We can't. NoAgendaMeetups.com, same thing. We get stories, boots on the ground, donuts, clips, story. I mean, everything you can imagine is brought to this show from our producers. And we like to thank the artist who brought us the artwork that we chose for the previous episode. And in 1604, we titled that one Janky. A lot of people love the title. Janky is a good word. And I think I'm pronouncing his name right this time. Matt Boisvert, if you pronounce it the way it's written, Matt Boisvert. Brought us the artwork that we kind of jumped on right away. There was the two signs, the signposts, old school, one pointing to the right, one pointing to the left. Anti-Semites, 33 miles to the right. Islamophobes, 33 miles to the left. And it kind of is right up our alley, I guess. This is exactly where we want to be with the show.
Yeah, the sign was the one. I mean, there was art that was usable.
A lot of people had the Fredericksburg Declaration, which we...
Yeah, they liked that. I mean, that wasn't going to happen.
Because we don't have a declaration yet.
I kind of like, you know, Darren again goes with the obvious, the easiest thing. You dream up the joke, he does the art, boom, it's there immediately.
Jen Psaki with the clown nose.
By the way, I would say this, the nose should be bigger.
Yes. Zelensky in heaven with the Gaddafi.
Not happening.
No, that's too much dead stuff. No, that wasn't going to happen. Boot jokes. No boot jokes. That's Ron DeSantis. That's a pool boy joke. I'm not going to participate in that. What else? Was there anything else that we liked?
I thought it was the stop AI with the six fingers. I thought it was cute. But it wasn't going to be used. I also liked, the Scaramanga's drunk robot, which I just thought was funny, but that wasn't going to get used probably. Well, now, this piece was probably the only one that was going to get it.
Where was the drunk robot? How did I miss that?
It's down near the bottom. It's under Jen Psaki's clown nose.
Oh, okay. Right, yes. Yeah. The drunk robot drinking club. Yes. We did have some, well, this is also Matt Boisvert. He had a Zelensky Coke image, which by itself, Zelensky with a lot of powder around his nose was funny.
Yeah, the powder around his nose was funny.
That was good, but
the pile of coke itself was not artistic. It didn't look like it looked like a small mountain. And then to top it off with a polar bear,
that made no sense.
Made no sense.
I mean, I know he had altered media stamped on it, but it was too bad.
But I do like the Zelensky face with the powder on his face. It's
very, very funny. See, we had a kill switch. You know, there was a Jordan Peterson with the hideous jacket.
Yeah,
one note, it's actually mirrored. The blue is on the other side, and the red. So the red and the blue are on the other side on the real jacket. Man, did you see Amazing Polly about the ARC conference?
No. I haven't seen Amazing Polly for almost a year.
She went all the way, Ben. She even brought up that Jerome dude. There was some from Sweden or something. He's also high in the organization, high up. I mean, he's a climate change guy. And he's like, you know, climate change is happening. It's real. But, you know, we just want to make sure we do it responsibly or something like that. You know, we don't want to, you know, we don't want to make poor nations even poorer with what? I mean, what? So they're all in on climate change now? Weird. Yeah, she had a pretty good breakdown.
Where is she? Is she on Rumble?
Yeah, I think she's on Rumble.
BitChute?
I think she's on Rumble. I think. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I hadn't seen her for a while either. Someone sent me a link. Oh, that's right. I got it from David Icke. David Icke, you know, notice he wasn't invited. To ARC. He's not part of the what did she do? She connected the ARC thing to, she got it all the way to Candace Owens. And there's a lot of interesting connections with these people. It's kind of
that's one of the best. She does that better than anyone.
Yeah, a little cabal.
I will say she's always been good at connecting dots that are like, whoa, that's kind of far out, and then she manages to do it. It's very difficult.
Yes.
That's why you don't hear from her that much. She definitely doesn't do two shows a week.
No, she doesn't. Anyway, we always like to thank our executive and associate executive producers at the top of our donation segment after thanking, of course, the explaining value for value once again, because people need to understand what it is and why we do what we do. And that's mainly so we don't have to have meetings with advertisers, which would just make the content suck anyway. So that's not going to work. So you have to keep us alive. And as long as you do, we'll be here. As long as we're alive and you keep us alive, we'll be here. So we look at the donations from top to bottom. And right off the bat, we start with Duchess Kim, keeper of the Nutty Fluffers, no stranger to the show, Hubbard, Oregon, $2,000. And let me read her note, because she sent in a typed note. In the morning, Adam and John, screw your freedom. Oh, no, that's their jingles, what she wants. Screw your freedom, little Gourier, R2-D2, cancer, karma, please. Yes, we can do that for you. 1,000 PhD was just too good to pass up. 1,000 to go to John and grumpy old miner in Tucson. 1,000 go to John, the grumpy old miner in Tucson, and I will take one for myself, please. Thank you for all you two do. You are both invaluable. Duchess Kim, keeper of the Nutty Fluffer. So she will have to do two PhD submissions then, right?
You have to go to the Ring site, noagendarings.com, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And there's now a link to the putting your data into the filling out a form so you get the right name on the diploma. And recommend using your name. There's no other word. Is the diploma is pretty, you know,
straightforward.
It's boilerplate.
Yes.
And we should be shipping out some tomorrow. The big bulk of them be shipped out on the 15th with the rings, according to Jay.
Yeah, I got a notification that my diploma was on its way. I'm very excited about that.
You should have got it by now, I thought.
It may be in the mail. I'll check.
Oh, you're going to get mail on Sunday.
Hold on, here we go.
Screw your freedom.
You thought karma.
We have another $1,000 from Sir Grease Monkey. Finally paying my tuition so you will release my degree. Like any other accredited university, which we're not.
No, we're not that.
we're the No Agenda show.
Yes.
Secondly, full payment of tuition brings me to Baron. Good.
Ooh, nice.
I would like to retain my name of Sir Grease Monkey and become Baron of the Permian Basin.
Done.
Okay.
I'll make that happen for
done.
You.
Done.
Viscount Stephen Dean, 1,000. And he says, oh, this is sad. In loving memory of Judy Dean, who passed suddenly after tooth surgery on 10/23/23. That's horrible.
Yeah, it could have happened to you.
She always told she always told me to go back to school and become a doctor. Well, here you go, Mom. Oh, probate,
whatever works.
Probate cancer. Probate. Listen to me. Probate karma, please. Viscount Stephen Dean of the Fox River Valley and Chicago Burbs. Oh, sorry to hear that, Viscount.
You've got karma.
Jennifer Derricks is up with another 1,000. Happy 16th anniversary, she writes. ITM. If I get a dame name, please make it Jennifer on the Mountain. That's all. Thanks.
Beautiful. Andrew Williams, 1,000. Request. Douchebag check. F cancer and jobs karma. ITM. Here's some value for the fantastic content produced by everyone and delivered with aplomb by the dynamic duo every week. Thank you. P.S. John. I always enjoy the perfectly timed whimsical folly. It always brings a smile. Please knight me Sir Socks of the Low Pressure. And he has roundtable requests, Westinghouse Silver Liners and Thorn Beta 5s. Do you have any idea what that is?
No.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
You've got karma.
I have no idea. Sir Leiron, another 1,000, out of breath, queuing up near the end of the line for my diploma.
Mm-hmm.
The show is still interesting. Thank you. The show is still interesting and entertaining after all these years I've been listening. No jingles, no karma. Sir Leiron of the wire of the Wiregrass, aka Doc Martin, PhD.
You got it, Doc. Annika Weber, parts unknown, 1,000. I'd like to be known as Dame Annika of the Pensacola Homestead. Well, I guess she's from Pensacola. I was hit in the mouth by my douchebag friend Scott during the pandemic and can't get enough of your media deconstruction. I've been holding off on donating because we are still paying for our house in Tennessee, praying to close any day now. However, I encountered the number 33 three times in 2 days. I knew it was time to donate and request some house selling karma. While I place my trust in God, I figure this can't hurt. Thank you both for all you do. I seriously can't get enough. I'm listening to all your old stuff, too. On episode 869, Swamp of Crazy, the election stuff is fun to relive. Really, it's fun to relive?
Seems unlikely.
Very respectfully, Annika. Here you go, Annika. Here's your karma.
You've got karma.
Okay, now you got Mike Statham, and he's in Layton, Florida, and he, or was it Florida? I've already skipped to the... Layton, Utah. And he wrote, where is this? Is this his?
Yeah, PhD donation, part...
Oh, okay, Knight of Parts Unknown. Okay, it's going to be the Knights of Parts Unknown. Jingles F-35 Karma. Mike said he didn't have really much to say, except he's got his PhD in there and then a bunch of other donations listed. So good. Okay. Thanks, Mike.
F-35 karma.
You've got karma.
It's gotten popular. Sir Tommy Hawk, Iowa City. How's your bank doing? 3:59 in the morning, gents. This donation is to honor the passing of Nora Lee Balmer, who lived 95 years at full throttle. I love hearing that. That's what I wanted. When I go, it's like, he lived at full throttle. That's right. The Iowa City area is better for having her around. Oh, I bet. She thanks you for your courage. Rest easy, Grammy. Sir Tommy Hawk, Baron of the Heartland. Indeed.
Sir JK in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Go Packers is up next. 333.33. Need some house selling karma. of the goat variety, jet guy variety. Thanks. So you got goat, oh, goat versus jet guy variety. So okay. You got both of them.
All right.
Thanks, gents, for all you do, Sir JK in Green Bay. Night of the entertaining kerfluffle.
You've got karma. You've got karma.
Now, Bruce Schwalm, do we have a note from him, or is that just...
No, this is a check that came in, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I don't have a note. Sorry, Ed. Bruce usually sends us something.
You've got... double up! Karma.
Double up karma. I'll do this one.
Harrisburg.
This probably blows off your spreadsheet. This is from Sir Thinks-A-Lot, Mansfield, Texas. Row of Ducks, 2222. It's now official. Ashland Speed, the No Agenda Racer, is... Oh, my goodness. Hold on. I have to do this officially. Is the winner of the 2023 SCCA Southern Conference Championship in the Formula Mazda. And she actually has no agenda on her car.
Yeah, it's cute.
And today is her 17th birthday. Can you believe that? She kicks butt on these cars. Happy birthday to my only human resource, and hope for a future, a patriotic, Texas-proud, God-fearing, resourceful, and humorous teenager. She seems well on her way to all of that. In 2024, she'll be going for the SCCA National Championship in the very fast and highly competitive Formula Enterprises Series. So that's the open car, fast. Of course, we couldn't do this without any... We couldn't do this without sponsors, so check this out. A lovely producer has set up a Give, Send, Go campaign. What a sweetheart. So if you want to be a sponsor, if you want to be on her car, then you can contact her. It's givesendgo.com/Ashland Speed with a Y to be part of the racing excitement. Yes, you probably get pit passes too. If you know of a business who would want to be a sponsor, please.
Yeah.
What?
You would get pit passes.
Of course you do. That's the whole point. That's what Formula One is about. You take your clients and have a good time, and you know,
yeah, it looks like a hot shot.
Yeah, but especially if you got a winning driver.
By the way, this girl is going to go far, just from the karmic aspect of her being named Ashland Speed. Mm-hmm. I mean, please,
speed racer, baby. Oh yeah, no, she has Max written all over her.
She'll be up there.
I think she can. She could do F1. I really do.
She could do an F1 for sure. That's where she's headed.
If you know of a business who would want to be a sponsor, please email sponsor@ashlandspeed.com. Thank you for your courage to all of No Agenda Nation for supporting us on the socials. For Jingle, please play the sound you make when driving a race car, which is wee. Yeah, we're very proud of it. We're very proud of Ashland. We're very, very proud of Ashland. We've been on racing cars before, but never on a winner. this is great. We're on a winning car.
We also on a bike.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
Max bikes. Windham in Spring, Texas is up with another row of ducks, 222.22. No note from him. It came in as a check, check, and so we'll give him a double up.
Double up karma.
You've got double up karma.
And as we near the end of our associate executive producers, Vincent John Miller in Kailua, Hawaii, 20117. Interesting number. Hey, John Adam, I am no longer an unemployed douchebag because of this podcast. Please de-douche.
You've been de-douched.
And here's the backstory. In fact, Dame TJ of the Side Eye hired me, and I work closely with my team, which includes a longtime knight and two others on their way to Dame and Knighthood. That's a success story. When we're not in a group chatting about no agenda at our weekly meetings, we save companies a ton of money on their bottom line at otterandmule.com. That's otterandmule.com. Oh, by the way, the Brown family from Florida are douchebags. Yes, they are. Sincerely, Vincent John Miller in Hawaii. A hooey hooey and such. Got it, bro. Thank you so much.
Let me wrap it up with Linda Lupatkin in Lakewood, Colorado. $200. And she writes, well, she's got new copy.
Uh-oh.
I'll talk with a Texas through the teeth accent. BeamersMakersInc.com with a K declaration. Whilst navigating a competitive job market, improve your odds with a remarkable executive resume that drives rapid results. Just find Linda Lupatkin on the producer list. Jobs Karma, please.
She must be doing an A-B testing now with her with her copy.
Jobs.
Maybe.
Jobs, maybe. Maybe
jobs
not.
Jobs and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You've got karma.
Y'all crack me up. Thank you so much to our executive and associate executive producers. You're always coming in big, coming in strong, and your PhDs are ready for you. I'll be conducting the ceremony in just a moment, along with the knights and dames and title changes. Thank you again for supporting us here on episode 1605. John's going to take us through to the 50s.
Yeah, we have a few more. Ron Sherman leads us off from Colorado Springs, Colorado, 160 and 40 cents. John Robinet, $100. Rowan Pike, $100. And he has a note, which you can look at if there's, see, there's a deducing or anything in there.
I don't think so.
Ivan Jarman in North Turramurra, New South Wales, Australia, $8.008. He says he forgot to get knighted, so I guess he's a... No.
Hold on a second.
No.
You said Ivan. His name is David.
Did I say Ivan?
Yeah, I think you did.
Wow.
Yeah. That's concerning. Now, did we forget him? What happened?
But no. He needed to tell us his knight name or something. It's his fault.
So he's not a black knight.
No.
Yip-yar. Keep up the brilliant
work.
He
wants to be a black knight like many others. It has to be our mistake.
Yeah, so he will be Sir David Callsign Barney Jarman, Protector of the Aussie Pilots. You got it.
Christian Grulish. I wonder where I got Ivan from.
I don't know, man.
What are you drinking? Christian Grulish in Lakeland, Florida. 8008, a birthday donation. We got you. Kevin McLaughlin, there he is in Concord, North Carolina. He is the Archduke of Luna, lover of American boobs, and he has 1605 boob donation. He's lost his ability to add to the donation.
He ran out of melons.
Sir Herb Lamb in Sugar Hill, Georgia. He never used headlamps, by the way. 8008. He's also...
No, he's back. He was overboard due to work, but he's catching up. All right. Welcome back, Duke of the Deep South.
8008.
Yeah, welcome back.
He's the Duke of the South.
Yeah.
Deep South.
Deep South.
Wayan Cartini in Torrington, Connecticut, 7421. Johan Seegers in Brie, Belgium. 6816. And there's Kevin McLaughlin again, 6006. And all he has to say is small boobs. Banstra in Tennessee, Nashville to be exact, 5993. Brian Furley, 5510. Sir Tom Dari in DeForest, Wisconsin, 5510. Troy Funderburk in Spokane, Washington, 55. Michael Gates, 5280. Craig Nosley in Cumberland, B.C., 5150. James Sharametta in Napanock, New York, 50. And he starts off the $50 donors. I just rattle them off, name and location, starting with James and following with Charles Peterson in Albuquerque, Kurt Patrick in Nanaimo, Jacob Martinez in El Monte, Lynn Malinowski in Stafford, Virginia, Alex Zavala in Kyle, Texas, Michael LeBar, I think, in Williamston, Michigan. Quinterox, Inc. in Bradenton, Florida. Whatever that is, go there. Quinterox. Brian Tannum in Shoreview, Minnesota. Sir Brian Watson in Raleigh, North Carolina. Walker Phillips in San Rafael. Aichi Kitagawa in San Francisco. Corey Jackson in Waterton, Tennessee. And then I believe he's in Oklahoma City. Brett Farrell wraps it up with $50 donations. I want to thank all these people for making show 1605 a reality.
And, of course, our gratitude goes to everyone who came in under $50 for anonymity. We will never mention any name under the 50. And so we see you, 49.99s, and everyone who was on one of the sustaining donations. These are important. They can be small amounts per week or per day or per month or per quarter, whatever you want to do. But if you have those on automatic, that really helps us out during the slower periods. And we really really appreciate everybody, no matter what amount it is. If it's meaningful to you, it's meaningful to us. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a No Agenda producer, you can go here.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Or you can go to noagendadonations.com. I don't know if it'll eventually forward or not. If John can find this password, it might. And to the executive and associate executive producers, those are real credits, just so you know. Just like our PhD, which are coming up, they're real PhDs. You can use the credits anywhere credits are recognized. We suggest your LinkedIn profile, your resume, and IMDb.com. And thank you once again for supporting us here. No Agenda, episode 1605.
Our plan is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Well, what do you know? We have a very important birthday, which took place yesterday. Mimi Smith Dvorak celebrated. Happy birthday, Mimi. Sir thinks a lot, wishes his only human resource, Ashlyn Speed, a happy birthday. Turned 17 today. We're all celebrating your success and your birthday. Sir Pokey says happy birthday to Adam Lambert for today. And Christian Grulick is celebrating. Happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe. It's your And you heard him earlier, Sir Grease Monkey came in, and I guess he's going to have a PhD, so he came in hard and heavy and receives a title change at the same time. He now will be known as Sir Grease Monkey, Baron of the Permian Basin, and we thank you also for your support of the No Agenda Show. Now, it's time to get those PhD graduates up here. Duchess Kim, Keeper of the Nutty Fluffers, John the Grumpy Old Miner, Sir Grease Monkey, Viscount Stephen Dean, Jennifer Derricks, Andrew Williams, Sir Leiron, Annika Weber, and Mike Staton. Welcome new No Agenda PhDs to the Society of Learned Persons. The path to this high academic earner for some of you has been a long, if not costly one. Some of the price of it has been paid by your hard-earned wisdom and in some other ways, but today is not an end. It is only a beginning. From this point forward, go forth and spread the No Agenda word far and wide. We will not be silenced. We will not be deterred. The truth is out there. Now go out and find it. Huh? What do you think?
You're getting there. You're getting there.
I'm working on it. Congratulations. Go to noagendarings.com. That's where you can find your PhD in the menu and send off your name that you want. We suggest you use your real name because that'll make it look just as real as it actually is. Don't be too jokey about it. And, of course, that is also the website where we can get our rings for our knights and our dames. And we have two dames and three knights. So, John, if you can give me your...
There you go. I got my 2-3 knight blade.
Nice.
Look at it.
Jennifer Derricks, David Jarman, Mike Staton, and Andrew Williams, all of you are up on the podium here, and because you are about to be knighted knights and dames of the No Agenda Roundtable, I'm very proud to pronounce thee as Dame Annika of the Pensacola Homestead, Dame Jennifer of the Mountain, Sir David, call sign Barney Jarman, protector of the Aussie pilots, knight of parts unknown for Mike Staton, and Sir Socks of the Low Pressure. For you, we have Hookers and Blow, Rent Boys, and Chardonnay. Also, Westinghouse Silver Liners and Thorn Beta Fives. Along with that, Beer and Blunts, Ruben S. Women and Rosé, Geishas and Sake, Baca, Manila, Bong Hits and Bourbon, Sparkling Cider and Escort, Ginger Ale and Gerbils. And, of course, the Mutton and Mead.
I want to also thank... There's somebody... I have to explain this. But John Monaco donated $50.33, and he should be on this list.
On which list?
The main spreadsheet.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good. I'm glad you cleared that up.
So I'm doing make good.
All right. So our new knights and dames, go to noagendarings.com. You may be going there already for your PhD. There you can see our handsome dame and knight rings. And along with that, once you enter your ring size, there is a ring sizing guide on the website and your address. We'll send it off to you with the wax to seal your important correspondence and, of course, the certificate of authenticity so you can always show people that it is for real. Thank you again, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting us and keeping the No Agenda train on the tracks.
No Agenda.
Well, oddly, there is no reports, no meetup reports, but we do have meetups taking place today in Central Florida, the Central Florida meetup. Well, that is well underway at Hourglass Brewing in Longwood, Florida. Hello, everybody. Hope they're listening. On Wednesday, the Killjoy meetup takes place. Killjoy, dare to have fun. 5 o'clock at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in Knoxville, Tennessee. We have that's No Beret. No Beret is hosting that. He's the only guy that I like. He posts pictures of cool muscle cars. Let me see. That's the, oh yeah. Then I promised I would pre-promote the November 18th, the 7th Northwest Houston meetup. That'll be in the 18th at Wakefield Crowbar in Houston. And man, if you look at the calendar, we have a lot. Does it go through Christmas? Almost. December 16th, Cincinnati, Ohio. We see New Mexico. We have Bergendal, the Netherlands on the 12th. We've got, Fort Wayne, Indiana. We have, oh yes, of course, the November 18th, Sunset Valley. I'll be bringing the Keeper along with me. And also, we will both be at the Indie meetup on December 4th. Hey, there's one in Brooklyn on the 9th. I can't wait to hear a meetup report from that one. These are the No Agenda meetups. If you've never been to a meetup, well, then you're missing out. You're only getting half of the show, really, just a portion of the show. You need to go meet some of your fellow producers. I guarantee you, you will not be disappointed. If you're disappointed, let me know. I'll refund you your money, which can't be done because it's free. NoAgendaMeetups.com. Go there to find out. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself. It's easy and always a party.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you want me. Triggered on hell to blame. You want to be where everybody feels the same.
It's like a party.
Ooh, yeah. Let's see. I have four ISOs for some reason. How did I wind up with four? You want to do yours first?
Let's hear yours.
Okay.
I find that more trustworthy.
Well, I don't know about that one. How about this one?
I don't need a detective. I need a keeper.
No. How about this one?
Here we go. No! Ow!
And that one got a laugh out of me.
This is my favorite.
La la la, fingers and ears.
Huh? All right, I got two.
Okay.
Fall back.
It's time to fall back.
Okay. Well, that's pretty good.
It's a celebration of this stupid time thing.
Elitist time change. Okay.
And then here's my favorite. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. These are all good. Let me see. The contenders are...
Here we go. No!
Oh! Oh, yeah. It's time to fall back.
I think we have to do fall back. I mean, you just can't get around it. It's perfect for the timing is right.
Yeah, it is probably the best one. Okay. Although I think a combination of yours and oh, yeah would be good.
Oh, hold on a second. Let me see how that works. So mine first?
Yeah.
Which one?
The guy making the one that cracks me up.
Here we go. No! Oh,
yeah. No. It doesn't work. It's too long. No, we'll do yours. We'll do your...
Fall back is fine.
Fall back is... No, it's beyond fine. It's great. It's great.
It's appropriate.
I wanted to play one little clip here. Just to show how often... Children are used for political means. I should say abused.
It's a lot. It's a never-ending theme of the show.
Yes, we have. Now we have just who kills whose children worser. That's what's going on right now. We had Greta Thunberg.
The worst.
Yeah. We had the throwing the babies out of the incubators. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Now.
But don't forget the crying teenagers that are crying over climate change.
Well, yes.
In public.
Yes. Let's go back to 1999. Now, this is before we really had, we didn't have global warming. We didn't have climate change. We had the hole in the ozone. Do you remember that, John? The hole in the ozone. And that was going to kill us. And this
we're all
going to
die.
And this is the girl who is known as the girl who silenced the world for 5 minutes. She's from Canada. Her name is, I forget her last name. She's Suzuki. Her dad is an elite, was an elite up there in Scandinavia. But we don't talk about that because she paid for her own trip. I think it was Brazil or something where they had this meeting and they show all of the elites just looking like, oh, wow, yes, she has no future. See if you can spot the similarities between Greta and all the other children abused for the global elite.
Hello, I'm Severin Suzuki speaking for ECHO, the Environmental Children's Organization. We're a group of 12 and 13-year-olds trying to make a difference. Vanessa Setti, Morgan Geisler, Michelle Quigg, and me. We've raised all the money to come here ourselves, to come 5,000 miles to tell you adults you must change your ways. Coming up here today, I have no hidden agenda. I am fighting for my future. Losing my future is not like losing an election or a few points on the stock market. I am here to speak for all generations to come. I am here to speak on behalf of the starving children around the world whose cries go unheard. I am here to speak for the countless animals dying across this planet because they have nowhere left to go. I am afraid to go out in the sun now because of the holes in our ozone.
Yeah.
I am afraid to breathe the air because I don't know what chemicals are in it. I used to go fishing in Vancouver, my home, with my dad, until just a few years ago, we found the fish full of cancers. And now we hear of animals and plants going extinct, every day vanishing forever. In my life, I have dreamt of seeing the great herds of wild animals, jungles and rainforests full of birds and butterflies. But now I wonder if they will even exist for my children to see. Did you have to worry of these things when you were my age? All this is happening before our eyes, and yet we act as if we have all the time we want and all the solutions.
There you go. Hey, when I was a kid, we had to jump under a desk so we didn't get blowed up by a nuke.
How dare you?
Drop and cover. Drop and
give
cover.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
So she'd be in her 30s, mid-30s now. Is she dead? Do we know?
No, I think she's in her 40s now. She, yeah, mid to late 30s. No, she's not dead. And you know, the existential, you know, all the, I don't know of any, how many animals went away? Aren't we in the sixth extinction? Where's the, she should be a part of Extinction Rebellion. She should be leading it.
Yeah.
But no, no such luck. They always use the children. Always.
But it works.
Yeah, but it's so
it works well.
Yeah, well, it's so disingenuous every single time.
Well, that's all we talk about is the disingenuousness.
Disingenuity.
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 Yeah.
All right, everybody. That's it. We hope you enjoyed your media deconstruction. Don't worry about it. Go outside. Sniff the air. Oh, no, you can't because, you know, the chemical's going to kill you. Don't go out
chemicals
in the sun. The sun might burn you to death. Just go outside. Enjoy everything. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your pets.
Throw a ball.
Stay off the social networks for the rest of your Sunday, will you? Phantomville, Sir Michael Anthony and Tom Starkweather, all part of our end of show mixes for today. And up next, we've got... let me see. I'm not sure. I thought we had beer, balderdash, and something else. Yes, beer, bourbon, and balderdash. They're coming up next on No Agenda Stream if you're in the troll room, trollroom.io. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where we may actually have some showers in the next day or two, but it will be showers. I'm John C. Dvorak.
We return on Thursday. Please join us then, will you? Right here on No Agenda. Till then, adios, mofos, a hooey hooey, and such.
going far right, and the rest just keep on bombing all night. Biden isn't going nowhere. Did you see him when he fell up the stairs? Comes to the left of me, Nazis to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with Jews, and I'm wondering what they're covering up. Hates and Thatcher's hands are covered in blood. Is it all dead? And the Schwab started waiting his day. Comes to the left of me, Nazis is to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with you. Comes to the left of me, Nazis is to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with you. Comes to the left of me, Nazis is to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with you.
It's November, and you know what that means. Discounts on leftover Halloween candy. Yum! Just in time for National Diabetes Month. Was that on purpose? Anyway, eating candy is a fun and effective way to develop type 2 diabetes. According to Joe Biden, 1 in 10 Americans has diabetes, and 1 in 5 of them don't even know they're diabetic. The CDC says that diabetes can lead to infections, heart disease, kidney failure, and so much more. All of these can help to fight climate change through population control. Diabetics also help the economy, boosting profits for industries from healthcare to processed food. Do your part this November by eating more sugars and processed foods, avoiding exercise, and, of course, taking more insulin and other medications. Unfortunately, type 2 diabetes can be reversed, so the futures of big pharma and big food depend on the choices you make today. Happy National Diabetes Month.
It's daylight savings time. Yeah, it's my least favorite holiday.
It kills people!
The first country to actually have daylight savings and standardize it across the country was actually Germany, or the German Empire, to be more precise, during World War I.
Scott Harding is one of many growers dependent on daylight to get the job done.
You know, you have to quit that much sooner. You have to have everything picked up before the sun goes down.
The Sunshine Protection Act, which would end the changing of the clocks once and for all.
Our goal as we spring forward this weekend, we're not going to have to fall back in the fall if we get our bill passed in the law.
Daylight savings makes this a whole more complex thing to work out.
Stop daylight saving time. That's what I want.
Change the back, change the forward, change the back, change the forward. For what? For what?
Best podcast in the universe.
Mofo.
Dvorak.org/NA.
It's time to fall back.